Director Farmer, are you ready?
When Lyndon Johnson was being wielded, the operating room for his famous gallbladder operation, the vice president was standing there, and the vice president, who was Hubert Humphrey, could be very loquacious. Humphrey said, Mr. President, God forbid that if you expire on the operating table, what do you want me to tell the American people? And Johnson says, I don't give a damn what you tell them, just keep it short.
All right, I'd like to call the meeting to order. AGP, are we good? Okay, thank you. I'd like to call the September board meeting of the Cambry Community Services District to order. If everyone would please rise so we can salute the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everyone. We do have a quorum. All four of our current board members are here. Do we have a report from closed session?
There is nothing to report from today's closed session.
Thank you. Sorry to rush you there. Agenda review, any additions or deletions for the agenda?
Yes, President Rice, I would like to comment on item number two and I'm sorry, I'm looking at it here. And I'd like to move item 7F to a future meeting. And I'll explain both. Public comment, I believe, is a long-held tradition for many years where we'd have public comment at the beginning of the year of the meeting. Sometimes we needed to extend it to the end of the meeting because of the 30 minutes allotted. Mm-hmm. I noticed that the Coastal Commission uses the same procedure. However, to have at the president's discretion additional comments at the end of the meeting, I think that should be limited to only those that we either restricted from speaking in the first place. And the reasoning is this. If someone were to watch this at home, mm-hmm. pop in at the end of our meeting, or put a speaker slip in, they've had the advantage of hearing and seeing everybody's comments and have a kind of a different perspective. It's like you're saying, if you aren't interested in saying something enough at the beginning of the meeting, that you didn't have an intent to say it. Also, people have an opportunity to speak publicly at each item that's on the agenda. It's untenable, I think, for me to have a person have another opportunity to do so at the last second. I was surprised at it being on the agenda this time. I don't know how. Well, it's just a new protocol, and I'm uncomfortable with it. So if we could limit it to on what? On things that are not on the agenda, and to do it this time would be, I don't know, I would like to see it struck and have it go back.
You mean the second public comment period?
Yeah, essentially at the president's discretion, additional comments may be heard at the end of the meeting. Doesn't limit it to those that weren't able to speak in the first 30 minutes. That kind of opens it up to anybody.
But it's also for items just not on, items not on the agenda.
If we specify that might
it's for public comment for items not on the agenda. If we are unable to complete that in 30 minutes, then people who would like to still comment on items not on the agenda. It's not a time for people to come and speak about items on the agenda.
Okay, could we limit it to those that had speaker slips for that first during this item two?
I wouldn't object to that. It's still also the president's discretion, and because we're going to be talking about the limiting the duration of the board meeting, so it's not like they would have to wait 8 hours.
Fine. I'll acquiesce unless somebody else has a similar objection. I just think it kind of opened things up.
And then removing or delaying a particular agenda item, Mr. Hirsch, can you speak to?
Yeah, I was going to suggest that item 7F be considered next month. I can give some rationale.
Well, it's certainly up to the board as to whether they want to
continue. We can handle that at the end of the meeting as opposed to pulling it now, or we should pull it now?
I think it's up within to your discretion to do it either way.
Okay, let me explain. Item 7F arrived to me only when I got my packet, and I wasn't aware of any of the circumstances surrounding this. I think the public and me, I'd like to have more time to look at the ramifications of it. And I think a month delay is not inappropriate, especially for myself and the public. And by the way, as it's agendized, and the recommendation from staff would not be acceptable to me. And even if adjusted. So if I can get support from another member of the board to possibly push it off to next month or a discussion.
Well, can I suggest that we, for now, keep it on the agenda and have the discussion about what might be acceptable, if anything. I don't know. Maybe nothing is acceptable. And then consider continuing it until the October meeting.
Okay, I'd be okay with that.
That's acceptable for me? Because I think the town would like to hear what we have to say.
I think Director Sanders has made a very accurate assessment of the situation. Thanks.
All right.
Okay. All right.
Is that agreeable?
That's fine. Sure.
All right. Then we're going to move to public comment for items not on the agenda, which is, looks like they've got Christine Heinrich.
Good afternoon. Am I on? Okay. Yes, thank you for this opportunity to talk, and thank you, Jim Berenger, for giving me another topic to talk on. The idea of limiting public comment further really surprises me. I think it's not a good idea. The idea that people at the end of the meeting might actually have additional information on which to comment would be good. I was very impressed at the Coastal Commission meeting that the commissioners were very open to additional comments. They actually solicited comments. They wanted to actually understand the issues and get the comments from the public, which is very different from what we often experience here and what you now would like to even make policy to close down public comment even further. So that's certainly my take on that. I think that's not a good idea. I actually came up here to talk about the original plan of filling Mike Thompson's vacancy. The original plan sounded real good. Gosh, you know, that was at the August meeting. We'll just have a special meeting before the September meeting, fill that slot in with a team player. And then, of course, the public at that time did not know that Greg Sanders would be leaving, and there would actually be two vacancies on the board. So in the event, as things unfolded, that didn't work out. The board was deadlocked, unable to fill that seat. So now the public knows that we have two seats coming up to be filled. It seems to me that it makes sense to have an election and fill those seats. The idea that we should somehow find clones of Greg Sanders and Mike Thompson to somehow fill those seats, when so much has happened since that 2014 election, we now know the actual costs of the emergency water project. We know at that time it was an emergency water project. It's now being presented to the community as a sustainable permanent water project. That's a very different project from what was actually in the issues during that election. We didn't know about all the violations, the inability of the district to manage this, the regional water board's dismay at finding how poorly this was run. All the problems. We didn't have the brine pond impoundment issues then. We hadn't even faced the blower fans at that point. So I think it's really important to let the community fill these two seats out of five that will be going forward. And I ask the board to decide to hold a special election. Thank you.
I have a question for Ms. Heinrich. Have you read the urban water master plan that was
not adopted? The whole thing. Can't question me adequately on that.
Let me suggest that you do that.
I will certainly put that to study.
I don't have any other speaker slips for public comment on items not on the agenda, so we are going to move to Stanley Cooper, who's going to provide us an update with the PROS activities. Welcome.
Good evening. Afternoon. Let me get my notes here. My name is Stanley Cooper. I'm one of the commissioners with the Parks and Recreation Department. Our mandate is to provide public spaces for active play for all ages. And we have many, many things that we deal with in that way. We liaison with the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, with trails in the community. We've got a big project we're working on right now that we've finished phase one of. It's by no means done. And that is the public park at the East Ranch Fiscalini. And there's been a lot of work done on that in the last, really about 7 weeks or so. And with big equipment and weekly meetings by PROS and to follow up on what's happening to make sure that everything's online for completion. Few things to go over with you right now. First of all, in phase one, we finished the parking. And I'd like to be able to address you all too. I don't know if you've been back to the old rodeo grounds to see the parking lot that's there now. It can function as an overflow for parking in the community itself. There's that trail, the bridge across the creek. Beyond that, there's a problem with it that we foresee. And Harry, I talked to you when you came down to one of our meetings about this, and that is, and so I call to the attention of the CCSD and to the NCAC and to Superintendent Gibson and the County Department of Roads that we have a situation where the meeting together of rodeo grounds and Village Lane and the Burton Bridge, that has a potentiality for having a serious impact from traffic. And so that, you know, the law of unintended consequences, we try to do what we can so that everybody has a place to play or to park or to drive through town. And now what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to really look at that intersection and try to figure out a way to manage the traffic through there so that it's safe for everyone. Whether we can, you know, whether it's your responsibility, I don't know. I think Bruce Gibson would be probably an appropriate person to talk to about that, but I bring it to your attention as something going forward we're going to have an issue with. We've worked on drainage. The drainage field is the water that comes down off of off the hill there. The drainage, while it hasn't been raining since we did this, it looks like we've got drainage covered. We found some old wells that date back 50, 60, 70 years when it was, was other functions there. Was some ranch land at one time. That's been capped so that we don't have to worry about that. The dog park has a new big and small dog enclosure with fence, and according to American for Disabilities Act, there is a good sound area for people with limited physical mobility to be able to park their automobiles and to use a trail to get to the dog park. And so that was put in phase one. Besides that, the leveling has been taken care of. The parking lot is ready. While I don't know the actual number of how many cars can be parked there, I believe it to be something in the neighborhood of 75 could park in there. It's a rather substantial parking lot. And there's already been a history of people from, well, for instance, the drivers from the post office parking those big trucks that they haul things in and out of. And so it's really a multi-use area, that parking lot there. We've been in contact with the skate park people who have come to some meetings, and we've talked about taking that wood area of the skate park and converting that into cement so that it is a more of a permanent, doesn't have to be replaced quite so often, kind of an area. And if you don't like skate parks, well, don't use them, but our mandate is provide public spaces for active play for all ages, and there are people who skateboard. So that's why we're in on that. So let's see other things here. There's also kind of an emergency exit area that this park that has to do with up Pine if necessary. So there's a road that comes down more or less by Cambry Pines Lodge that comes down into that field that can be used if we need another way of getting out of there. And besides that, we've been in contact with the dog park people. We've had people come to our meetings from Green Space. We try to listen to everybody's needs. And, I discover that we have very little power over anything. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to make a park that's going to be fun for everyone. No doubt that there's going to be people in the community who don't like it. And I guess I would close my comments by quoting a dear old friend of mine, Leon Bordigeri, who told me about, you have a couple of openings on the board here. He said, if you get yourself on the CCSD, be expected to be called at 3 o'clock in the morning. Somebody's going to call you a son of a bitch. And so, we have a split in this town, and we always seem to have had that split. And I'm happy to say that it doesn't seem to exist in Parks and Rec. What we try to do is just make it better, more accessible for people to have a place to play, especially children, because play is the way that children learn most naturally. Okay? Any questions?
I do have one question. You said that you have people coming to your meetings and that you have discussions. Are there any issues that the board needs to be aware of going forward, or things that people have raised at those meetings that maybe we need to have on our radar?
I think that one about the intersection is probably in terms of safety issues.
Okay.
My wife and I have lived here for over 30 years, and while it was her fault coming down Burton the other day, she almost got into a wreck, and fortunately people were watching. And so it is a weird little intersection there that needs to be marked better, or three-way stop or something, to make sure that we, in our attempt to make things better for people, in some ways make it worse.
And I think I remember that when we were looking at the EIR for the East Ranch development, that was an issue that was raised.
Mm-hmm.
And we will definitely get on it, especially now that we've got all the parking there. Vice President Sanders.
I didn't hear you mention the bridge over Santa Rosa Creek from Main Street, and that's another access point. It was built by the district in about 2004 with grant money.
Yeah, the wood bridge?
No, it's metal? Cement.
Yeah.
It's a very substantial pedestrian bridge, and the idea was that at least some parking could occur on Main Street and people could simply walk across the bridge to the park, and it's also a good emergency access route.
Or vice versa, they could park at the park and come into town.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Director Berenger?
Thank you for your report. And yes, the corner might be an area. Of course, that's outside of the jurisdiction. But the PROS is recommended to make recommendations to the board. The board, even though we don't have authority on that, could be, play the bully pulpit to try and move it forward. But it's not a CCSD responsibility,
right.
But we're responsibility for helping at least influence it. So don't, even if it might not be a responsibility, don't shy at making your recommendation. And as a standing committee, which occurs every month, with an agenda, is one of the two standing committees that are existing right now. And I'm for standing committees as much as any. So thank you.
Director Berenger, there's also the issue of that new walkway that's coming down, that hiking trail that's coming down Burton. Who know of any of you, Harry, do you know about that? That is actually going to come by Village Lane and...
Oh, yes. I don't know much about that other than, you know, I do know that it's on Mr. Gibson's radar.
Okay.
He can only do so much. With the slide that happened down into Village Lane and threatening a lift station, you know, the CCSD is involved in trying to do that. Mm-hmm. His comments, if I could paraphrase them, is that it's a major project,
yeah,
and it's going to have to be a major project, and it's not a simple one. But he, of all the projects in town, he knows that that is a high priority for this community.
Well, thank you for letting me speak.
Director Farmer?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. I want to thank Mr. Cooper, or Stan, since we've known each other for a long time. But I want to thank Mr. Cooper for a very comprehensive report on the park over there. I have always been seriously concerned about the issue with traffic right there at Burton Drive and coming out of Rodeo Grounds Road. So I'm glad to know it's being given higher priority than it has in the past. And also, I can actually see... You know, I just flashed on this. If there's a time when there's a big happening there and people are coming in from out of the area, which I think can be anticipated, which would be the most problematic because people are totally unfamiliar with that area, that we might even call in the highway patrol to control traffic. And you see that happen at events. That might not be a bad idea. And finally, what you said about play and how important that is for young people. That's another thing that's distressed me. I mean, recess has become non-existent at schools now.
Actually, so I've been subbing at all three of the schools, mm-hmm. and at least at the grammar school, there's really great active play that happens.
Oh, cool. There. Well, I'm glad to hear that. So anyway, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your report today. Next up, public safety, the Sheriff's Department. Commander Vogue, welcome.
Thank you, and good afternoon. Commander Jim Vogue, the commanding officer of Coast Station. This last month, which covers from August 25th through today, we had 130 calls for service. That's slightly up, was dramatically up from the last month. It was really slow at 74 and 108 before that. Suspicious circumstances, about 21. Phone scams, we had 3, including grandchild in jail, DirecTV scam, and Microsoft scam, which I'll cover in just a minute. Disturbing the peace, 18. Check the welfare, 14, which is about normal for Cambria. On the 31st of August, 200 block of Andover Place, we had a senior citizen that was telephonically contacted by an alleged representative of Microsoft. And the person said that they would clean up his computer and provide a service agreement for him for $600. And the victim thought that was a pretty good deal, so he allowed the caller to take over his computer. And he did that, and he said the name of his company was Oak Tree Trading, doing business as SAG Solutions. 2 weeks later, the same person called him up, and he said that, you know what, they didn't do the job they had intended to do, so they're going to refund him his $600. So the victim looked in his account, and he had $6,000 in there. Now, this is quite common, believe it or not, where somebody gives you way much more money than you originally gave them. I've seen this several times. And the victim called him up, said, no, you have $6,000. You made a wrong deposit. He said, okay, just give me all your account information, and I will ensure that the appropriate $600 is back in there. And that's when the victim got a little suspicious and went back on the system and found that the $600 or $6,000 went away also. So he was out his original $600, and these are very, you know, they go through different states. They're using burner phones. It's very difficult situations to investigate. So the best thing is to prevent them and be aware of what they're doing. On the first, 400 block of Layton, we had a vehicle theft, not the car itself, but items in there, makeup, video games, all other kinds of things, but it involved unlocked doors. All three situations that we've had recently on vehicle thefts are all unlocked doors. We're a very trusting community, and I'm telling you, don't be so trusting. You can trust, but keep those doors locked. On the 9th, on the 9,000 block of Londonderry Drive, we had a domestic violence investigation resulted in a felony arrest for domestic violence. And just to let you know that domestic violence is a mandatory arrest, whether it's misdemeanor or felony. The difference between the two situations are traumatic injury. If we note traumatic injury, it's an automatic felony arrest. On the 13th, on the 5,000 block of Nottingham, this was an interesting call. A woman in a red bikini was allegedly dancing on the stairwell topless that led to the reporting party's residence. The reporting party had problems with the lady because she is in a vacation rental, and she and her friends were up all night taking photographs of nude females in the hot tub. So the activity made his dogs bark. He was more upset at his dogs barking, I guess, than the activity, but it was bothering his dogs. So he put out the call to us, and we responded. State Parks heard about it and backed us up on this call, all the way from Hearst Castle.
How come we weren't called?
The female in the bikini stated she was just doing yoga, and she was not nude, so she doesn't know what the reporting party was talking about. She and her friends were leaving soon, so the problem was abated. But this is a good time to talk about vacation rentals and vacation rental ordinance that a lot of people don't realize that we have here. You know, there in Cambria, Cayucas, and Avila, there's a county ordinance that limits parking, the number of people there, signs and frequency, and the amount of tenancy. So, you know, if you have any issues regarding this and people there, if it's a disturbance, you call the sheriffs. But if it's a problem that you know, too many cars there or something like that, or the people aren't responsible vacation renters, you can definitely call code enforcement for the county. But any other criminal issues, make sure you give us a call. Another situation that happened just on the 20th, a resident received a check made out to him for $9,000. This is kind of unusual, from Bijan Diamonds in Los Angeles, right in the Diamond District. And this is where it gets fishy. Then they received a call from the person that represented Bijan Diamonds, and they said, don't tell anybody about this, but go ahead and cash the check, send me the money back, and what I will do is give you a bigger check and give you some more money next time. So they went to the Rabobank and showed him the check and questioned him, thank goodness. And then what happened was is that we were called. It turned out that Bijan Diamonds got hacked. These checks have been ending up to all over the country. The Secret Service has opened an active investigation on it, and they're investigating it. So if it sounds too good and it sounds a little criminal, it usually is. So just to let you know about that. And last but not least, this one just came up the other day. A gentleman in Cambria received an email from Bank of America. At least it said Bank of America, and it had this, all the letterhead and everything from Bank of America, and it looked very legitimate. It said his account had been compromised and that he needs to send an email back to Bank of America to make sure that it is him and provide his account information to validate that. Now, if you looked at the fine printing where it even they had the email address was Bank of America, but then there was like a slash with like somebody's name. So it was a private email address. It wasn't Bank of America. And what you need to do is go to the bank or definitely look up the bank, the legitimate Bank of America, and give them a call. And these scams just drive me nuts because, you know, we have an elderly community here, and they're trusting again, and they fall for a lot of these, and I hate to see them victimized. So Other than that, do you have any questions at all?
I want to say thank you very much for having somebody for the Coastal Commission hearings that were here this month, and I appreciate you coming down. I hope you enjoyed some of the meeting yourself.
Actually, I did.
Good. And then on the vacation rentals, also people should know that part of the code is that there's required, every vacation rental is required to have a contact phone number for 24-hour contact phone number. So if you can't, if you have one in your neighborhood that you're having problems with, you usually can get that from code enforcement, who's usually only on duty 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. But you can usually get a phone number in case there is a problem with a vacation rental that you live near. It's one of the mitigations for people
right.
being
and
able
we
to.
We will even respond and take a report, even though it wouldn't be our enforcement action. And so that can get over to code enforcement.
Great. Thank you very much, Commander Vogue. Any questions? Okay. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, we have ad hoc committee reports. Oh, this is, I need a separate category. I do. Cambria Community Services District Fire Department. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm standing
in. I did not intentionally do that. I'm sorry.
Well, thank you. I'm standing in for Chief Hollingsworth, who had a different engagement he had to attend to. For the month of August, we had 70 emergencies over the month of August. And just as a reminder, that's up 13% from the same time last year. So just know that our percentages are increasing. So in August, we also had the 140th year anniversary of the fire department. We had a kind of an open house. We had basically 300 people attend the fire department. We had bounce houses for the kids. We had a live fire demonstration for those people that were there. We also had CPR training from the ambulance company and some of the fire guys. We had CERT sign-ups for a CERT class that we did. So for all those who missed that, feel free to come by the firehouse. We can always do the CPR training. We know we always have an open door policy for the public. The NCOR, the North Coast Ocean Rescue, is doing their pier to point fundraiser this year. It will be on October 7th. We're still doing signups, so feel free to look for that. And this year it's also going to be dedicated to Liam Taylor, one of our NCOR members who passed away due to an accident. The new chief vehicle, Chief 5700 vehicle, has been delivered from the factory. It's still not ready to be put in service. It still needs equipment added to it and emergency lights and sirens and all that kind of stuff. The new engine, the fire engine, 5792, is actually in LA. It's no longer back at the factory. And it should be up in Paso Robles at their maintenance facility in Paso, coming at the end of this week or early part of next week. Now, that being said, it's still going to be a while till we can put that in service. It came with some loose equipment like ladders and some hand tools, but we still need to add all the rest of the stuff to it. We're going to be stripping down some of our older equipment, putting all the equipment on the new rig, mounting it, and then we have to train everybody on the new rig. All the drivers need to get trained on how to pump it, how to operate it, and that kind of thing. So we're really not looking for it to be in service on calls for maybe a month, month and a half. That being said, Chief also wants to have a traditional ceremony for induction for it into the workforce. And he does not have a date on that set yet. I'm sure you'll hear more about that. And that's pretty much it, unless you guys have any other questions or anything.
I have a question. Yeah, I have a question. Your name and title.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Ryan Engineer Maloney
from
your fire department.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to that new fire truck. I can't wait to take a ride on it.
I think a lot of us are because, we're basically replacing a 30-year-old one, and the one that we have now is running first out is 12 years old, and it's getting to that point where some of the maintenance things are starting to pop up on it and needs constant repair, so it's going to be nice to move on to something that be a little more reliable.
That's great. Thank you very much for your report.
Thank you.
Now we're on 5A. The ad hoc committee reports and other board member, related board member reports.
No, wouldn't 5A be manager's report?
Ad hoc versus ad hoc committee? Turn back one page.
Oops.
Usually manager's report.
It says, I see. And then right after that, 5B is ad hoc committee reports. Okay. Well, I'll deal with that. So we'll skip 5B when it comes to it. Liaison reports. Well, maybe I'm not there then. No.
It's a double entry.
But that's okay.
Two
I'll report on the NCAC, I suppose.
Thank you, Director.
And PROS is already covered. And the NCAC, I think the one thing that people could be aware of is that Supervisor Gibson at that meeting did describe what's going on the streets. There's a lot of paving being done on Main Street and blacktop and so on and so forth. And he explained that what that is it's in preparation for next year, for 2018 and possibly 2019, but hopefully 2018, where they're going to do a chip seal on all of the roads. So what you're seeing now is just prep work to get us through this winter, and then spring, the hope is that they'll do a chip seal on the entire route. Whether it's going to cover the street, Bridge Street, he didn't know at the time. But so that's what's going on when you're seeing it. That's all I have to report.
Should I make reports
Director
now
Farmer?
As well, even
yes,
though it's
please.
Out of order? Okay, well, I have two, you know, one from the Forest Committee and one from Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch, so I'll do the Friends first. So with regard to a non-native removal, over 25 cubic yards of ice plant has been removed from the ranch near the Bluff Trail. This was with some freshmen from the week of welcome at Cal Poly. So how cool was that? But at 25 cubic yards, it was just like this really small area, not as big as it sounds. There's people that are coming out every Wednesday, 8 to 10 folks every week, removing non-native plants, you know, on the ranch, and that's a cool thing. Eucalyptus under 8 inches in diameter have been removed from the forest near Huntington. It's the first part of the project that's going to remove eucalyptus up to 18 inches in diameter. And there's also the effort, of course, being made at removing the German ivy in the same area. With regard to forest thinning, an area of planted trees was thinned near the Dolphin Bench. There's other areas near Owl's Roost where thinning is going to be taking place starting next week. And there we are, just more surveys being done in sensitive areas. The FFRP has printed a new brochure with an updated trails map. Three social trails have been closed to allow for plant regrowth. And there's going to be docent walks for October, and they're happening on Saturdays, the 7th, 14th, and the 28th. If you'd like to, you can go by the office or contact CambriaRanchWalks.com for more information and to reserve a space. With regard to the Forest Committee meeting that we had that was, it's sometimes a little on the lively side, I guess there's three things that I would want to comment on. First off, the invasive weed guide, which we've talked about a number of times, it's going to be an app available not just in English, but in the Spanish language as well. There was a serious discussion about hiring a forest ecologist, and also perhaps a suggestion that we might pursue the idea of an open space district that is separate from the CCSD. And that's what I have to report. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer. I welcomed the Coastal Commission when they met here earlier this month at the lodge, and I think they enjoyed their stay in Cambria. They got a good look around town, and so thank you to everybody that helped pull that off. And I don't have any other reports. Mike Lyons, did you want to report? Comment on the general manager's report or the ad hoc? Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Okay. Then I think we are. General Manager Gruber, please.
Director Farmer, I'm Jerry Gruber, the general manager, so I always wanted to make sure I introduced myself, so I think everybody knows who I am. So I was supposed to keep this short, but we got so much going on, I'm going to keep it semi-short. So give me 15 minutes, and we'll get through my whole report. And just a quick update, our wells are looking...
You want the timer?
Yeah, if you would, that'd be great. The wells are up. They're looking, our well levels in the Santa Rosa and Santa Creek, Santa Rosa Creeks are up. Production was up slightly last quarter, but that's because State Parks is now using our water. The gradient level at the wastewater perk ponds out there is at a plus. Our WBE, which is our Windsor Bridge East level, is at about 4 feet, which is good. Units of water billed were up considerably. Again, because State Parks, our largest customer, is using our water again. And our unaccounted for water is running between, right now, after we fix that large leak, between 10 and 14%. I'm giving that range because part of that was calculated as part of the leak that we had. So 10% is industry standards, between 10 and 14%, you know, we're not up in the 30, 40, 50% range, so that's fantastic. A sustainable water update, I've finished the CPO job description. We're going to be floating that to the union and have them take a look at it, but that's complete. Wrote a job description for the sustainable water facility. The impoundment basin and the closure plan, I could spend 15 or 20 minutes on this and all the great things we're doing out there, but we did submit a very, very comprehensive 30-page closure plan to the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and that was submitted today. And the closure plan that we're proposing is comprised of two components, which is evaporation and a blending of the contents of the impoundment basin along with our wastewater effluent. If the plan's approved, it will cost the district somewhere in the $20,000 to $30,000 range, which is considerably less than some of the figures that were previously talked about. And we're looking at about a 5.5-month period of time to get that pond completely emptied. As President Rice said, update on the regular coastal development permit. We meet with the county once a month on that. The next step in that process is to bring the regular coastal development permit to the Planning Commission. We're looking at a 5 or 6 month window there. I'd like to thank President Rice and Vice President Sanders for being parts of those meetings. They come down once a month and meet with us. The Coastal Commission meetings went real well from what I heard. And I also heard that they thoroughly enjoyed being here in the community. They hiked the ranch. They got to go up to Hearst Castle. We had a really good meet and greet at one of the local restaurants here in town that was well attended. So fantastic. The East Ranch Park Improvement Project, I got some photos that I'll show about that. Update on the forest test sites done on the Fiscalini Ranch that Harry touched on a little, or Director Farmer touched on a little bit. I got some pictures of that. New fire truck that Engineer Maloney talked about, I got a picture of that. Current staffing levels of the fire department, we're 4-0, as you know, 4-0 staffing all the time. And our reserve force is completely filled, so we got a full functioning fire department. Status on the update of the process of purchasing the library. The Board of Supervisors approved that agreement. We're in the process right now of spending some time with Muni Finance to get the financing in place. I'm going to ask Patrick, our finance manager, to put a 1 or 2 page sheet on our website starting next week that shows an amortization of what the purchase price of the library was, what the improvements will be, and what that cost will represent to the district, and compare it to rent over a long term so the community can get a better idea of really what the out of cost expenses are relating to that purchase. Again, we've done our due diligence on that property, and we have any documents that anybody wants to look at regarding the integrity of the building. Those are documents if anybody wants to look at. I'll talk about, I'll show some brief pictures. We continue to make water and wastewater treatment plant and collection system improvements. And then improvements to the water system. I've completed a professional services agreement with William Bellis. He'll be designing and putting out to bid the Stewart Street tank repairs. There's been a lot of conversation about the Stewart Street tanks, the one that needs to be repaired. His professional services agreement was $16,000. So essentially what he'll do is he'll spec it all out, he'll put it out to bid, and then we'll get bids back to replace those seven panels in addition to making the necessary repairs on the side of the tank. And he, both him and I project managed the Fiscalini tank, so we'll be doing the Stewart Street tank together. So we got $16,000 there, and we're anticipating that the cost to repair that tank will be about $25,000. So 16 and 25 is 41,000. I budgeted about $60,000, so we'll have a little bit of money left over in the water department so we can use it for something else. We need to meet with the IT ad hoc committee again because we are in the discussion phases of selecting a new financial software for the district. We have made a tentative offer to our new finance manager. We went through some pretty extensive interviews. We had on the interview panel, we brought in some other general managers from other districts. And then we had a final set of interviews yesterday with two of the finalists. One had a doctorate's degree, and the other one has extensive experience in municipal finance, especially special districts and cities. Has a great deal of experience. I know there's been some concerns about Patrick leaving. I'm concerned that Patrick's leaving. But we got a really good candidate. So once that conditional offer is accepted and the necessary background checks are done and all those things, then we can announce who that individual is. But I think he's going to be a real good fit for the district. I think he's going to be a real good asset to the district. The Bartle Wells proposal that was originally on the agenda for this month, we got some revisions based on some input from the Finance Committee, which is comprised of President Rice and Vice President Sanders. And so we pulled that, and it'll be on the agenda for next month. But I need to meet with the Finance Committee or the Budget Committee sooner than later. One of the things that I asked Alex to incorporate, and I've done this in other districts and cities before, is that a fixed component for repair and maintenance, and it's instead of building it into the rates, you would see a line item on your water bill. So that's in the proposal, and it's one of the things we're going to be looking at, but that money would be specifically designated, and it may just be a couple dollars a month, but it would be specifically designated repair and maintenance water, repair and maintenance wastewater, and that would go into a fund, a restricted fund within the enterprise funds that wouldn't be able to be touched for anything other than repair and maintenance. So I think it's something that we'd like to continue to look at. And then the ad hoc, we're kind of behind on the ad hoc committee. It's not their fault. It's staff's fault. We've been working so hard on other things. But I need to meet with the infrastructure ad hoc committee. Again, I need to meet with Director Berenger and Director Farmer because we've put a comprehensive CIP list together that's going to be incorporated into the rate study. But one of the components that needs a little more work on the wastewater side is the collection system, and on the water side is the distribution system. So I want to make sure we incorporate all those things. And I continue to talk on a regular basis with Senator Flores. We did have a meeting this week with State Water Resources Control Board. They came down and did a site visit and did an evaluation of our Santa Rosa and San Simeon permits and regarding licensing, and that meeting went real well, and we're moving forward as quick as we can to expedite getting the licensing of those of the Santa Rosa and San Simeon Creek aquifers and the permits associated with that. So I'm going to, how much longer do I got? 5 minutes. Let's go to the PowerPoint real quick, and I got it. These are great pictures. Ready? Go. Anytime. 4 minutes. 5 minutes. We got it. We're going to do every staff report like this, too, so they're loading it up. Okay, next slide. I should get points for technical. Oh, well.
Can you guys forward that? We were trying.
Oh, that's a septic tank we found. So that's the Phillips house. Next, this is part of the phase one. This is eucalyptus tree stumps that removed. And what I want to do is just paint a picture for everybody is that, you know, we're a multifaceted organization involved in a lot of different things. So we got the park. We got the eucalyptus stumps. This is relating to the park. We had to pull the eucalyptus stumps out to get the gradient and drainage and swales right. Those came out. That wasn't an easy undertaking. Next slide. The house was demolished. We talked about that. It was hauled away. It's no longer there. I'd encourage everybody to go out there and take a look at it. The park. Next slide. Okay, this is the start of the construction of the dog park. We've come a long way since then. We still need to get redwood chips over there and fire hydrants and benches and signs and everything like that, but it's doing really good. This is the handicap parking pavers for the dog park. This was a hazardous tree removal. Okay. Going back to the pavers for the dog park, this is a handicap parking pavers for the dog park. Go ahead. You're doing fine. Hazardous tree removal behind Madison Street. You can see some equipment there. We're removing a lot of trees off Madison Street right there, part of the project. Continued efforts right there. You can see it's our staff right there. The eucalyptus project on the west side of the ranch. Director Farmer talked about that a little bit. If you go up that trail, I call it Cardiac Hill, right off there to the right. I hike that about four times a week. Looks really good. Good project. Good small project. Good manageable project. Those are the eucalyptus that were laid down and chipped up, and those are some of the work crews on the right-hand side. Great project. Went off without a hitch, except a couple bee stings. Talked about the 140th year of the Cambria Community Services. Well, Cambria Fire Department back then, but now it's the Cambria Community Services Fire Department. Had over about 300 people show up, had a bouncy house, had all kinds of things, and it was, from what I understand, it was very, very well attended. Thank you to the fire department for that. They did a great job. This is our new fire truck. So this fire department's new engine that will be delivered next week, that was over $500,000, and then we'll do is we'll take the one that's in and we'll rotate that to the second unit, so we'll have two full-time trucks on staff. So next one. Okay, so you can't really see this, but this was an idea that was come up by staff. It's placed at the back of the plant, and it's catching a lot of inorganics, things like plastic and things like that. And what we do is they remove that actually, it takes out a lot of the stuff from being sent out to the perk ponds, and it's keeping it out of our pumps too. We've had problems historically with our effluent pumps getting fouled and clogged up. So we came up with this idea. We had FRM fabricate them and install them. This was something that the district engineer and myself and John worked on, and we got it installed, and they're working fantastic. So what it's doing is it's catching the debris going out of the back of the plant. And then it's not going in through our effluent pumps. And so this is the welding that we replaced some of the handrails on the digesters. These are all brand-new handrails. As you look down on the right-hand side, all the way down, those are brand-new handrails that have been replaced. and then the next one. And this is what we're going to need to replace still. To replace all the handrails on the digesters, the remaining, we're looking at about $50,000. And that was what the bid came in at. So we're going to go back out to bid on that and have that on the October agenda. Talk to about the infrastructure committee about it. Again, it wasn't in the budget, but I'd like to try to get it done cheaper than that. And then we'll have all the digesters, all the handrails replaced, and all that, those safety concerns addressed. And remember, those digesters were not in operation for many years. So, okay, give me two more minutes. We started to remove all the old manhole lids. Other metal has been collected here at the plant, and we've started with the old manhole lids and the metal. We're selling this old metal to South Scrap Metal in Paso Robles, and it doesn't generate a lot of money, but it generates a couple, $300-$500, and that money will be put back in the wastewater fund. And then in August, Bob Wright and West Coast Tree replaced 20 manhole rings and lids. Again, we've had a really bad I&I problem, infiltration and intrusion, the heavy rains. So we keep replacing these manhole covers. These manhole covers are watertight. So if we get heavy rains and the water goes above those manhole covers, it doesn't make a difference. The plant won't be inundated with them. So, slowly but surely, one at a time. So we'll keep doing it. Cal West Rain replaced the discharge on pump one so that both pumps have been rebuilt and have discharge heads. So these are the effluent pumps. The water flows out of the back of the plant that I showed you on that screen we installed. That debris used to get caught up in these pumps and cause mechanical problems. It doesn't happen anymore. So we've taken both these pumps. They're completely rebuilt. And they have what they call variable frequency drives on them now so we can control the speed of them. And that's how we're going to be blending at a controlled rate, the effluent with the impoundment basin water out of the pond as part of the closure plan. So I won't go into the details of that, but brand new pumps on that. And then we FRM installed a new clarifier drive on the clarifier number two. That's on the left-hand side. And then during our PM on the influent grinder, DeLon found that the grinder had failed seals, and we purchased and rebuilt, replaced, and installed it. So actually the grinder, that grinder right there, sits down in a vault and hadn't been serviced in years. So we wound up pulling one out, and then we pulled the other one out and got one rebuilt and then just replaced it. So that kind of grinds up everything before it goes to the plant. So we had a training room down at the wastewater treatment plant, and it was pretty disgusting. Carlos redid his facility. Carlos and his guys down at Rodeo Grounds, they gutted the whole thing and redid it in-house. They did the same thing down at this facility. They completely replaced the kitchen, the bathroom, and all the flooring. And they've taken an old facility and made it look really, really nice. It was all done in-house for under $5,000. The guys did that on their own time. And the willow trees, so we did a project out at the impoundment basin. I'm sure some of you have been out there and seen it. That's the fence on the, let me get my bearings right, the east side of the impoundment basin running north to south. It took us about 6 months to get the permits for this. Those are willow trees. You just can't go in there and hack them all down. So we cleaned that. We had a contractor come in and completely trim that fence line of all the willow trees. Next slide. And those are what some of them look like. Remember, that pond was in existence before the impoundment basin. It was used as a wastewater pond. So we've had years and years of willows just growing through that fence, and we got the necessary permits, and we cut them all down. And next slide. And the waiver of the permit requires the CCSD to replant three trees for every 4-inch or greater branch that was cut. This is an area that will be used to plant. We're going to plant over 200 willow trees to comply with the permit. So we just didn't cut trees down. We're going to repopulate that area with new trees. So, and then the Regional Water Quality Control Board has required the CCSD maintain this fence. This is the fence along the perk ponds to keep animals out. The fence factory will be making the repairs. So once we took all those logs out, no animals were getting in there because they just couldn't get through the vegetation. But once we got everything cleared out, we realized that we had to make some significant repairs to the fence along the impoundment basin. So all that's being redone by the fence factory. and then mesh putting up. And that's it. And sorry I went over. any questions? But I just wanted to let you know we're doing a lot of good things, and appreciate the board's support and staff's support and everybody else's support. So.
Okay, I just had one comment, and thank you very much for including the details on the public records requests, because we had asked for that, and I appreciate that you included that this month. Other than that, are there any board comments or questions, and then we'll go to public comment?
I would prefer to hear public comment first. I do have a comment after that.
Mike Lyons, followed by Tony Church. Welcome.
Thank you. I am truly astounded by the thorough and dizzying report by Mr. Gruber about the staff's activity, and I'm constantly amazed at how small a group we have can accomplish such great work. So thank you very much. I could make a long list of the things I'm happy with what I heard about today, but one I will thank you as a ratepayer and taxpayer especially for. And that is, we all know that the Regional Quality Control Board had a rather hostile attitude towards the CCSD and Cambria regarding the effluent pond and the contents of it. And they made some rather expensive demands on removing the contents. Through the negotiating skills of our staff, I heard today that the bill for that solution has moved from about $1 million down to $20,000 or $30,000. So as a ratepayer, I'm very, very pleased with this kind of cooperative activity that you're working with agencies. I would say that if Mr. Gruber has a few extra days, I'd like to send him to North Korea to talk to Mr. Jung Il Kim. Actually, what I came to say today before I heard the wonderful report was that I noticed that there are a number of public information requests listed here, no less than 5, incidentally, about wanting to see the actual resignation letters of 2 of our esteemed directors. There's also another very extensive request for information from Mr. Oriana about a real estate matter and a water matter. I noticed that the board or our CCSD is able to charge what amounts to user fees to Mr. Oriana to the tune of about $100, it seems to me, which couldn't possibly cover all of the work that you would have had to do if you're able to provide him with all this information that he wants. But more to the point, do we have a chance or a point, or is it even worth it to establish a user fee for other people who might want public information? I'm not against transparency, and I'm very much in favor of people being able to ask for public records, but I wonder if this wouldn't help defray the cost and lessen the burden on our budget a bit.
If I could respond to that just briefly. Unfortunately, under the Public Records Act, public agencies are severely limited as far as what they can charge for providing records. You're limited to the actual cost of duplication. You can't charge for staff time and all those things. And it's one of the areas of frustration for public agencies, which often do have to spend a considerable amount of time to comply with the Public Records Act.
Thank you.
Mr. Church.
Okay. Good afternoon, directors. I wasn't going to speak, but I read the general manager's report, and I didn't see any reference in there to the work that's being done out on San Simeon Creek Road as regards the looks like a new basin, which is adjacent to the impoundment basin. I didn't see any costing. I see that it's been lined, and I'd like to if you could explain a little further what it is for and how much it cost and whether it was permitted. Thank you.
I'm not sure what Mr. Church is referring to.
Can you clarify where you mean?
I drove out there yesterday. There's sure. A big basin next to the existing impoundment basin, right behind it, and it's being lined.
I'll have to go out there and see. One of the things, if I could comment on, We are working with county public works departments, specifically the road department, and they've agreed to clean out the entire area from on the north side of the highway going west to east, all the vegetation out of there.
It's got nothing to do with the road. It's okay. Directly behind the impoundment basin, and okay. It's fairly large.
Well, what...
I mean, I'm not dreaming it up. I drove out there, and I saw it.
Well, what I think he might be referring to, and I haven't been out there for a couple of days, is that we are starting some boring samples for... that's part of the cease and desist order for the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and it could be to hold those contents of those boring samples. But I'll go out and check.
It's fairly large.
Yeah, but
it's about 3/4 of the size of the existing impoundment basin.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, with my own two eyes, I'm not imagining it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I don't think you are. I just. I'll have to go out there and check.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll get your response. Thank you, Mr. Church. All right. Yes, Director Farmer?
Are we taking comments on the General Manager's report?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So I just want to mention, I appreciate the fact that you pointed out some of the improvements that are taking place at the sewer plant. That's a good thing. Also, the fact that some of the staff out there at Wastewater on their own time upgraded the area where they kind of hang out. I just want to piggyback on what Mike Lyons said. We've got great staff at Wastewater, and this is just another indication of their dedication to the job. And then finally, when you were talking about the development of the East Ranch and you were talking about the dog park, and then immediately after that, you were talking about fire hydrants. So I just want to make sure that there are actually fire hydrants at the dog park.
It seemed like
a natural. You know, just that's all.
What I meant is we're going to take some old fire hydrants and we're going to donate them to the dog park. So kind of fire hydrants, dogs, you know, that type of thing. So, but there is firefighting capabilities out there. But that's we specifically saved some old fire hydrants just for the new dog park. So that's what I meant. I kind of jumped around there. Sorry about that, Director Farmer.
Nothing to be sorry about. It gave me a chance to, you know, create a few laughs.
Director Beringer.
Yes, I think I'd be remiss by not even after the PowerPoint. Pointing out that I've only been here for 17 years or so, but since I've been here, the CCSD has spent $2.5 million to help purchase the ranch. And if I go through the general manager's report, I see five dead and dangerous trees, removing eucalyptus, phase one of the park project being completed, demolition of an abandoned house, dead and dangerous trees, thinning previously planted site behind Dolphin Bench and Ridge Trail, and on and on and on. And I haven't been taxed more. And it seems like we have these responsibilities that haven't been funded. I haven't voted for, nor do I see where this money is coming from. So it's just something that people should realize, that the responsibilities become more and more. We're receiving empty lots, and we haven't taken up the responsibility to help. If we didn't have the Friends of the Fiscalina Ranch Preserve, things would be much, much worse, and they should be allowed for the amount of work and things that they do. I did would like a little bit more information about Bartles and Wells, the fact that they weren't on the agenda. As you know me, I'd like to deal with things as soon as we possibly can. That rate study is far behind. We're continuing to borrow more and more money to the wastewater fund, which is underfunded. Mr. Director Farmer and myself are almost at wit's end to try and see if we can get this pipeline of additional water is picking up. We're selling more water. That's great. But we haven't put any CIP money into wastewater, except we were loaning money. It's reducing our cash. The loan is going to wastewater, and it's affecting our cash position. And people should understand that if all of a sudden we had more money, only rates can support water and wastewater, and we can't borrow money from water and wastewater, but it is true for the other way around. So I hope that the committee, when they went back for to Bartles and Wells, they took advantage of the thing that I thought we needed to do, and is that to squeeze them a little bit, or not squeeze them. Yeah, make sure that their particular contract is accurate. They have done work for us in the past. They do have a lot of information. They're the obvious person to do the job because they do have a leg up on anything. If we were to put it out to bid, they would win. But let's make sure that they are in a position that they can do, that we can make sure that it's efficient. I also noticed that maybe we need Patrick for this, but it looks like we only have issued purchase orders for the emergency water supply project of $10.4 million, but authorized $13.2 million. I don't know if that means that we've only spent $10 million so far. So if we've only spent $10.6 million, and that's what, or $10.4 million, and we've authorized $3.2 million, hopefully we don't have to use it all. And if we do have to use it, we can use it for the things that we're trying to do. And the $466,000 that we've lent to the wastewater department, if ratepayers start paying and self-funding that particular activity, if that money comes back, we can use it for some things like that we've made commitments for. And I look at these well reports a lot. I don't know what it's page 23 in the packet. And in 2005, 2006, and 2007, we were pumping about 750 acre feet a year. And now with a reliable supply, us being able to activate the safe water supply project, we're only pumping about 450, or even maybe as high as almost 500 acre feet. So if we're pumping 700 acre feet a decade ago, and now we're pumping much less, it's hard for us to make the argument that there isn't enough water, I guess. I'm just trying to figure out and make sure we don't have any problems. Also, if you look at page 26, the two numbers I've looked at, especially when we were ready to build that water project, the WBE, which is in red, is at 4.71. I don't think it'd even get higher. I think if it was over 5 feet, it would be pouring on the ground. So we're doing very well on that. It doesn't mean that some year we're going to have problems, but if that gets down to 3 feet or lower, we can now keep the gradient, which is the other number I look at the San Simeon well field. The gradient is 2.47 right now, which means water is continuing to flow toward the ocean, and we don't have a problem of saltwater intrusion. And I don't know if people understand exactly how the plant works. We're taking water, which is closer to the ocean, that has a little bit of salt. We remove the salt and put fresh water farther upstream. So we're actually adding water to the aquifer. We aren't dewatering the aquifer. I think people have a misconception of how that plant works. And we need to do a better job of explaining how that works and how, in fact, we're going to have some mitigation water going to the lagoon that's actually friendlier to the environment than in the past. One last thing. One last thing, page 28, I think it is. I can see that the well levels are near high levels. That doesn't mean it's always going to be that way. We might have a problem in the future, but now we have something where we can resolve the problem in San Simeon and keep it in the average range if we need to run the plant. So that's my comment on the manager's report, and next time, not so many slides.
Anything else before we move on? All right. Is everybody okay? We don't need to take a break. We're okay? Okay. Then we're going to go to the consent agenda. Any items to be pulled from consent?
Madam Chair, I do need to disclose that I am a member of American Legion Post 432. So for purposes of item 6C, I can vote. I'm not an officer. There's no conflict of interest for me.
And Madam President, I might mention that I have been a member of the veterans at the local veterans American Legion. I noticed yesterday that I hadn't paid my dues this year. So officially, I suppose I'm not a member, but I do tend to make intend to pay my dues, and from council, there's no need for me to recuse myself from that item.
All right. Director Farmer?
Yeah, I would like to pull 6C just for a little bit of discussion, and also I'd like to take a brief look at the expenditure report, if I could do that.
You have comments on the expenditure report?
Yeah, I just want to clarify for the viewing and listening audience, so to speak, with regard to some of the expenses that are here for the month of August. I just wanted to point out that with regard to, and these are mainly with regarding the emergency water facility, with regard to the Abalone Coast Analyticals, and they do lab testing for us.
Director Farmer, what page, sir?
Oh, excuse me, that's on page 35. I'm starting on 35, just kind of move through there.
Thank you.
So there's 13 items with regard to the emergency water facility, although here it says SWF, with regard to Abalone. And one of them is for just under $15,000 for asbestos and nitrosamines chlorine tests, and then a little over $9,000 for radium and asbestos testing. And the total testing for the month of August was $26,000 and change. I also want to mention here on page 38, with regard to Balanced Public Relations, who we pay $7,000 a month, $2,300 and change as goes to them for the facility. Also, I want to mention with regard to CDM Smith, with regard to task order number 8, which is that's on page 41 and 42. And that's basically EIR support, $21,000 and change. Michael Baker International on page 51 for professional consulting services, $43,500. So the total cost for operations, project expenditures, and so forth for August to the ratepayers of this community for the emergency water facility was $111,000. Also, I want to ask about on page 61, there's a purchase here of, let me try to find it here as quickly as I can, my apologies. Purchase for a Toro Dingo, and that's, I'm sure it has something to do with work that's being done on the ranch, and then a grapple rake. So this amounted to $13,000. I know a lot of work was done on the ranch this past year, especially with the number of fallen trees and everything. I'm wondering why we purchased this as opposed to renting something when it's needed, considering, we're so challenged right now financially.
So let me start with the last one, Director Farmer, 61. I believe that is for a bush hog, and that was the $10,000 was budgeted. So it wasn't something that was not in the budget. And the grapple rake is for the same thing, that's just turns the soil and things like that, and that was also budgeted. But I want to make sure, I'm going to check with Carlos, but Carlos does a really good job on his budget, never overspends. So if memory serves me correctly, I believe both those items were budgeted for the maintenance of the ranch and open space area in general. CDM Smith, task order 8 in support of the sustainable environmental impact report. I believe that should be coming to an end since the CDM has been certified. We're still getting invoices from Michael Baker International regarding the SCIR. Those are still coming in. Those are nothing. They're not for additional work. It was for money that the board had budgeted and approved. In Abalone, that one particular test that you're talking about of $14,000. The sustainable water facility Title 22 asbestos nitrosamine chlorine test. I'm thinking that that's probably a one-time annual test. But one thing that I wanted to point out is that once we get a year of data, and a lot of these samples are coming back non-detecting, once we get a year of operational data, I agree with you. I think that the cost associated with both our Title 22 and Title 27 is very expensive. Again, when the Regional Water Quality Control Board issued us those permits, they took a precautionary stance and wanted us to make sure that this system did not degrade the basin management plan at all. All of our samples are coming back what they call ND, which is non-detect. So I'm hopeful that we can, after a year or so of operational data, which would be the next cycle, next time we run the plant, that'll give us a year of operational data. We've ran it on three separate occasions, and we have about 9 months of operational data so far. Once we compile a year of operational data, we can go back to the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and especially on a lot of these non-detects, hopefully they'll require that or cut back on some of our sampling requirements. But you're absolutely right; it is a lot of money, but I believe that in this process we're collecting data that would ultimately lead to us sampling less. And Michael Baker International, again, that was an expensive undertaking for the SCIR. We got it certified. So that was a budgeted item. Again, a lot of money. You're absolutely right. And then CDM Smith, Task Order 8, in support of the SCIR, that should be closing out pretty soon, too. But I concur with you that it is a lot of money. And one of the things regarding abalone is once we get that pond empty and we close it down, and I'm looking at some of the test results here, once we get that impoundment basin closed down and we surrender that Title 27 permit, a considerable amount of cost will go down as it relates to running that facility. The biggest one is the insurance bond that we have of about $77,000 a year. We have to keep that in place as long as there's water in there. And then there's the monitoring and the sampling and all those things. So that'll get us some reprieve. But I understand what you're saying, and I agree with you.
Seems to me we'd almost be wise to be looking at whether we should put in a lab of our own and hire somebody if we're going to be spending $30,000 a month.
Well, one of the things that I had mentioned earlier is in the closure plan, you know, the cost of $20,000 to $30,000. We're going to buy a piece of equipment that allows us, and we're going to need this to test for boron. It's EPA approved and it's standard methods approved, and it's about $6,000. But it gives us the information we need. So we can look into that. Wastewater labs being certified are not that expensive. Water laboratories is a major undertaking. There are some handheld devices that are ELAP recognized and standard method certified and that we could use to take some of these samples. But I would be more than happy to look into certifying a water lab. But just with the
we have a long way to go. We have a long way to go before we even have that policy discussion. I just mean if we're going to continue to have a lot of expenditures.
I think it's worth looking at, and we could start by going to these labs and saying, okay, what was your upfront cost?
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of compiling the information ourselves, go to these labs and say, okay, what was your upfront cost, and see if that makes sense from a policy standpoint.
Thank you. Director Barringer.
Thank you. Director Farmer pointed out a couple of things that were being paid for to CDM Smith, and Task Order 8 is what you referred to. And I again go to page five of your report, but page 16 in the packet, where that task order actually was authorized, and you're just paying against what has already been authorized, but the authorization still remains at $10.4 million. Is that correct?
That's correct, but you know, we as staff and district engineer and myself and the water department and wastewater department, you know, we need to make sure that those task orders aren't expanded on, that there's not cost overrides, okay. And that we manage our consultants. And I think these are very good points.
In general, do they stay within the purchase order or do they
yes.
overrun? Okay.
Yes, they do.
Okay.
But again, we have to do our due diligence mm-hmm. also.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. I'd take a motion for items A and B, and then we can have
right.
a discussion.
Right, yeah, and I agree with pulling number C.
Okay.
I move approval of consent calendar items A and B.
Is there a second?
Sure, I'll second.
Director Farmer seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. No opposed. That passes 4-0. Consent agenda items A and B. Okay, consent agenda item C. General Manager Gruber?
Yes, Madam President.
Should I start the timer?
No. Item 6C is discussion and consideration of amendment to the agreement to the American Legion for the use of the Veterans Memorial Building. So, disclosure, I was a member of that unit, and since I moved, I withdrew my membership. My wife and I were both members of it. This is my recommendation. It's not my decision. It's just my recommendation to you. I think that you know the American Legion and this facility, you know, it's a special place, and it houses our veterans and a lot of activities. And my thoughts on, and I wasn't influenced by anybody. I wasn't asked to do this. It was absolutely my decision as far as the recommendation goes of the dollar a day. So we'd be losing $999 a year, but I'm hoping to pick that money up on the other end of the spectrum, which would be for the other folks that are fortunate enough to use this wonderful facility throughout the year. And there seems to be a really, and I should have done a better job in analyzing some of the data, but there seems to be a real willingness now, and Tracy's been really instrumental in this because she's handling the rental of the Veterans Hall, in asking folks to pay the minimal amount that's due for events that are held within this building. And our thoughts on this were that would be offset by those events. You know, the way I look at this building is it is the veterans building. It's not the CCSD. It's a memorial building for our veterans, and so it was my recommendation, but it was just a recommendation. But I think it's a good recommendation.
Thank you. I think one of the most important things for me in terms of this is, I mean, $90 a month for gas and sewer and water is, I wish I could pay $90 only and have a bunch of people to chip in. But also, I have no idea what they spend annually keeping the new monuments out there and just putting that beautiful landscaping in, I think is an asset for this community and for this building, whether or not we cover their utility bills, I think is going to have to come to a vote, of course. But I don't want that left out, and I didn't really see it here, so that's why I wanted to make sure that it's not like, and they have been maintaining it quite beautifully, if you ask me, and continuing to improve it. I mean, that corner wouldn't have a sidewalk without the help of the American Legion doing that work. So whether we pay their utility bills.
May I also
Vice President Sanders, please.
The Legion is on the cusp of spending another $6,000 received through a grant application to continue the landscaping along the Cambria Drive edge of the parking lot. So there are lots of in-kind contributions that the Post makes, but Director Farmer asked that it be pulled from the consent calendar. I'd be interested in hearing what his thinking is.
My thinking was just, you know, discussing this item because in case the audience doesn't know, for 29 years, almost 30 years, we had an agreement, you know, with the Legion, where they were paying money for almost 20 years. It was $600 a year. And then for the past 10 years, it's been $1,000 a year. And so I was just pulling it to, it was just my own innate curiosity, why now, why this change is taking place.
Well, I can speak to that, and Commander Ehlers, Dave Ehlers, is in the audience, and he may want to chime in. The post has a couple of forces at work against it. As you know, the American Legion sponsors the annual picnic in the park. It's a big event that includes a pretty spectacular fireworks show. Over the past decade and a half or so, the cost of the fireworks has doubled. It costs the Post about $15,000 a year to put on the fireworks show. Now, for the last two or three years, the Tourism Board in Cambria has been covering that cost with some contribution from San Simeon. But that's not going to go on forever. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is the demographics are working very much against the Post. The size of the membership is shrinking, so the dues are shrinking. And the Post, in order to continue to make scholarship contributions for high school students, sending students to Boys State, and carrying out the core mission of the American Legion, the Post simply cannot afford the $1,000 a year. It's that simple.
Director Berenger.
I don't see it in the packet, but there is a, you know, the Veterans Hall is here because of the veterans. And yes, we're talking about all the good things they do out there. And I don't know if we should care about the fireworks. But what we should care about is the Veterans Hall and why it's here.
Yeah.
And the veterans have a priority use. I don't know if you realize that. There's a, it's at the generosity. It's in part of the law says that the veterans have a priority use. So if it's a dance club that comes here, and the veterans wanted had a need to use it instead, you know, they've been not allowing, but they certainly allow good use. So all of the activities, all of the funds that we get from activities, and I think in general, it's the nonprofits that are getting a break, that are paying a minimum amount. But commercial users, I do believe, pay a good amount. And had the Veterans Hall not even been here, we wouldn't get that revenue. So for them to continue to carry on at a dollar a year is going to make a small difference, but the small difference is going to be put to the community's use. It's going to keep the Veterans Hall here. It's going to keep the veterans involved, and the amount of work that they've done for the community, I think, is laudable. And I think it's administratively wise for us to approve this amendment.
Yeah, if I can just point out, and for the benefit of those who are not familiar with it, in California, there's a code called the Military and Veterans Code, and Section 1264 is among those sections that governs how veterans' memorial buildings like this, which are located throughout the state, are to be operated. And I'll just read you the pertinent portion here. The governing body, in this case the CCSD, that maintains any facilities like this may rent it out or let nonprofits use it free of charge when such use will not unduly interfere with the reasonable use of the facilities by a veterans association, veterans service organization, or nonprofit veterans service agency. So, in all respects, the language in this amendment that we're considering today, that is in Section 1, mirrors, parrots, if you will, the language in the code. It's not the CCSD granting anything to the American Legion Post that the Post is not already entitled to under California law. With respect to rent, as Director Beringer said, the CCSD can let nonprofits use it free of charge. Section 1261 of the Military and Veterans Code does say that with respect to veterans organizations, the rentals shall be fixed by the governing body, again the CCSD board, of the political subdivisions, and may be nominal in amount. So there's a specific contemplation in the law that these kinds of facilities for veterans organizations can be made available for, again, a nominal amount, specifically called out in the statute.
I have just one question regarding the first priority use. This doesn't change the terms that there's use of the entire Vets Hall twice a month is free of charge, but then the rest of the time, if there's something that the Legion wants to use the entire hall for, they are subject to the same rates. Is that true?
Well, I can answer that. There's a specific number of days set aside for
it
Legion
use. It said
use.
Two that I saw in the contract that I saw.
I believe there's another provision which gives us like six other days. The two that you're talking about may be in addition to the regular meeting days. I'd have to go back and check. But that portion of the contract would remain unchanged. This doesn't amend that. All it says is that if there is a function that the American Legion reasonably wants to perform, mm-hmm. and there's a conflict in the schedule, the American Legion has first priority.
So it's like affirmative action for American Legion.
Yeah, I guess so, right.
Okay. So,
But again, it's not anything that isn't already in state law.
Yeah, and one of the things that I wanted to note is the rest of the contract is not part of our packet. Would have been nice to be able to have that, and I appreciate Mr. Hirsch providing that contract earlier. I think maybe it was yesterday. Because that would have been really helpful right off the bat. To all of the American Legion members, thank you all for your service, and I'm totally great, both to the country and to the community, because really the amazing landscaping and things that have gone in around the flagpole it's just... this building would not be the same without that beautifying effect. And that's the reason that I'm going to support the waiver of that $1,000. And we're going to come back in 5 years, which is the length of the contract. And if at that point the Legion is not keeping up the same kind of community involvement or something goes awry, we can revisit this. And I believe that it's a fairly loose, casual kind of agreement that we have, so that if something were to come up in 4 or 5 years, we could bring it back as a board to have that discussion. And so that's why I'm supporting having this amendment. I want to make sure since the Legion does have priority use in this contract, that over whatever the days are in the current agreement are paid for at the rate of whatever the rest of the community pays.
President Rice, if you're intending to support this agreement, there's a potential of relieving the public speakers that might be addressing the subject. It's up to you.
Well, I definitely need to have them come to the podium, which is going to be what we're doing next. Yeah. I have Christine Heinrich, followed by Jerry McKinnon.
Thank you again. Certainly, we honor all our veterans. We are honored to be in the Veterans Memorial Building, and outside are the monuments to their service. The American Legion has occupied this building for many years. However, all community groups do have access to it, and as such, they bear some of the costs. The idea that somehow these costs can be shifted onto other groups seems very unfair to me. I think that they essentially operate a bar and restaurant in this building, which is not what other groups do. Other groups just use it on occasion. So I certainly think that, I mean, what is the cost of the utilities? How much water are they using? Are they defraying those costs? I think that those issues should be looked at before we decide to give them a free pass on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Jerry McKinnon?
Jerry McKinnon, is it on? Okay. Thank you for the opportunity of addressing this issue. It's not really an issue. Everybody seems to be in agreement. It's just a question of for how long. And I think that's a viable question, for how long. And we're saying 5 years to see what happens. But anything that we look at is supported by history. Now, this building came under the code in the early 1950s. In the early 1950s, veterans buildings were established throughout the state of California. We're fortunate that we have a building here in Cambria because it was established by the Board of Supervisors. The Board of Supervisors put one in each district supervisor's territory. The third district territory building was to be in Cayucas. But then they questioned why, my goodness, you mean the veterans from Cambria are going to have to drive all the way to Cayucas? And you have to remember in the 1950s, between here and Morro Bay, there were over 200 turns in the road. It was a very narrow road, and it took a long time to get down to Morro Bay. And so they decided to turn this building into a Veterans Memorial Building. Now, historically speaking, the Veterans Memorial Building we have here was just this single hall that was brought up from Camp San Luis. It was brought up in three pieces and reassembled by the Lions Club. The Lions Club couldn't pay the property taxes, and so in the 1970s, when the CCSD was established, they turned it over to the CCSD. The American Legion in Cambria started in the 1930s. It had been a viable organization when the town had probably fewer than 1,000 people in it back in the 30s. So its performance in the town began with World War I veterans. And somewhere along the line, the state decided that we've got to honor the veterans of World War I, World War II, Korea. Because the Veterans Memorial was started in the 1950s. So based upon that, we came into existence as a Veterans Memorial Building under that Veterans Memorial Code. Excuse me. I'd like to call your attention to the last sentence in your 6C agenda page. It says it does not address the American Legion having priority for use of the entire facility. Staff past practice has been to give preference to whoever first reserved the facility. However, given the nature of the facility, the staff believes it would be appropriate to amend the agreement to grant the American Legion priority over other users. Well, it's any veterans organization has priority use of the building, not the American Legion, because the law doesn't say American Legion. At one time, we had a Disabled American Veterans Association here in town. the VFW could come along. There are a lot of different veterans organizations that would have priority use of the building. And I would like to have that understood, that that is established under the law of priority use. And so it's a humbling experience as a veteran to realize that the honor was placed on veterans way back in the 1950s by the state of California. For that, I am very humbled and appreciated. Very humbled and appreciated for what we have here, because in 1984, when the facility downstairs began, that was nothing but a room full of junk. Now, there had been an engineer that had his office down there. It had been used by the Boy Scouts. It had been used in a variety of cases, but in 1984, it was just a room of junk. So the American Legion, taking an opportunity to do something with that room down there, did the building a favor and did Cambry a favor for allowing us to have a place to meet. Thank you very much for this entertainment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. McKinnon. I think Mr. McKinnon makes a fairly reasonable point about making sure that the contract includes any veterans organization having priority. Can you speak to that, either of you?
The law takes care of that.
Okay.
Military and Veterans Code, Section 1264.
Right, which is what I had read. I just want to make sure that we are clear about the policy in case there was some other group of veterans that wanted to, and I would imagine that the American Legion Post would be amenable to being cooperative with another.
Right, right.
You guys don't fight amongst each other, right?
And as Director Sanders said, the law takes care of it, because we shouldn't even put in, with the exception of the CCSD, it has priority over everyone. Okay.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that, and I think we've worked cooperatively in the past, is my understanding. Mr. Hirsch, is it an issue that it says that it speaks to the Post 432 versus veterans groups generally?
No, this is an agreement with the Post.
Okay.
And if another one were to come into being, I'm sure we could have discussions and have a similar agreement arrived at.
All right. Any further comments?
I would just like to ask. If I believe it's the current president of the Legion, commander of the Legion is Mr. Ehlers?
Ehlers,
excuse me. Is he here?
He is.
Right there, that's what I thought. Could you just step up to the microphone and just let us know how the members of the Legion feel about this?
The American Legion and Post 432... We, of course, support the agreement. We work very well with the CCSD in using this facility and maintaining this facility. The memorial, you know, and there was concern about utilities. We cover a lot of the utilities. We cover the lighting bills for the memorial, you know, all of the construction to the tune of well over $100,000, significant investment in that, the landscaping. We continue to do things here in the community and to keep this building up. So we're in favor. The other benefit is any, and as Vice President Sanders mentions, funds are tight at the Legion. Membership dwindles. It's part of the way it is. A new member, you know, in the demographics here in Cambria. We do what we can to raise sufficient funds so that we can stay focused on our primary objectives, taking care of our veterans and our community and scholarship. So any dollars that we have to put elsewhere takes away from that primary mission of supporting our community and our veterans. So ultimately, it goes back into our community. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would entertain a motion on this item.
I move that we approve amendment number two to revise, should be revise, not revive. Maybe it should be revived.
Brought to.
Because it's been, it's revived. Revive and amend agreement for use of Veterans Memorial Building facilities.
I'll second that.
Moved by Vice President Sanders, seconded by Director Berenger. Let's have a roll call vote, please.
Vice President Sanders?
Yes.
Director Berenger?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Yes.
President Rice?
Yes. Thank you. It passes 4-0. Thank you. I appreciate the discussion. I think it made, I know it made me feel more comfortable, and I hope that the people in the community are.
I thought it was awesome, Jerry McKinnon's presentation. That's why it's so nice to have older folks with historical memory in this community. It just makes you feel good.
Absolutely. Thank you. All right. Let's move on then to the next item. And I lost my agenda page. There we are. Item 7A. General
Thank
Manager
you.
Gruber.
Thank you, Madam President and board members. Item 7A is discussion and consideration to direct staff to provide the Board of Directors with a list of district-owned properties unencumbered by conservation easements or restrictive covenants for the potential sale. And the recommendation is that the Board of Directors direct staff to provide a list of district-owned properties that are unencumbered for conservation easements or restricted covenants for the potential sale to be discussed at the October board meeting. The fiscal impact, the sale of underutilized property owned by the CCSD could generate money that then could be used to offset the cost associated with the purchase and the renovation of the former county library building into the CCSD offices. At its July 27, 2017, the Board of Directors authorized proceeding to purchase the former county library located here on Main Street for the use of its district offices. As noted in the staff report, the estimated total cost of purchase and improvements to the library is $937,535. Staff believes that there are underutilized properties owned by the CCSD that could be sold, with the proceeds then being used to offset some of the cost for the purchase and improvements of the library building. Accordingly, staff is recommending as a first step that the board instruct staff to prepare a list of district-owned properties that could be sold, excluding properties encumbered by the conservation easement or restrictive covenant, so the potential sales can be agendized and discussed at the October board meeting. It should be noted that Government Code 54220 provides that any state or local agency disposing of surplus property shall, prior disposing of that property, send a written offer to sell or lease the property to certain government agencies, nonprofit organizations, and affordable housing sponsors. More than happy to answer any questions regarding this matter. Thank you.
The executive committee had asked that for this to be put onto the agenda as one way to look at how we offset some of the costs for the new administration building. And this is the time for us to have the policy discussion about whether this is something that we want to do to try and provide funding for the district. Vice President Sanders.
Yes. I think, just as a suggestion, that rather than have the staff go through each and every parcel of property that the district owns that is not encumbered by a conservation easement, et cetera, it might be helpful if we focus the staff on perhaps just three parcels that I think are kind of low-hanging fruit. One would be the property that is directly across the street from the memorial building here. And Mr. General Manager, that's about an acre in size, is that correct?
Yes, Vice President Sanders, it's 1.44 acres, if memory serves me correct, and it's three commercial EDUs.
So that property has some significant value for commercial use. A second property would be the parcel and house that the district owns on Van Gordon Creek Road. We all know what even small houses in this neck of the woods sell for. So that's another potential significant source of revenue for funding the administration building costs. And then the third parcel presents kind of an interesting wrinkle. The third parcel would be the pocket park that is adjacent to the post office property. And John Ellers, who is the president of the Historical Society, is here. I believe the Historical Society has a concept in mind whereby the old schoolhouse, which is presently on Lions Club property, would be moved to the pocket park. And there may be an arrangement that can be made between the district and the Historical Society, and perhaps even with the Lions Club participation, since the schoolhouse is on their property for now, an arrangement can be made whereby the district can not only unload the pocket park, but help facilitate a permanent home for the old schoolhouse. And John Ellers may want to speak to that as we get into our deliberations here.
Director Berenger?
I agree with Director Sanders' initial viewpoint on that. I think that this is going, if in fact we want to move forward as a policy perspective, that we should limit the appraisals as a public agency. We need to make sure that there is not a gift of public funds. And I think that if we limit it to those three parcels from an appraisal perspective, I think that that's the direction I would want to give staff. However, there are a group of other properties that are unencumbered, and there's a list of them. And I want to make sure that the community realizes that we're not looking at the ranch or anything like that or any of the retired properties. So that's why I'm very happy to see the unencumbering language in here. But there are a couple of several other properties that the district could not get appraisals on, but come back with maybe three or four that might be out there that would qualify this board and the community is more aware of other properties that could be disposed of. There's several that come to mind. I won't even mention them right now. So maybe another short list of three others that could be there. And it helps the public and us understand that there's assets that we can move. When the library is built out, it's going to be an asset that's worth far more than the purchase price. And we have assets that are no longer used. They're underutilized. We don't have a good reason to have a home or a house on Van Gordon Creek. And I think it just makes sense of shuffling it around a little bit. So I would support the direction that Mr. Sanders is moving toward.
Director Farmer?
Yes. With regard to the Van Gordon Creek house, I think it's the Spillman house, am I correct? Is that what, if that's what's being referred to, I was out there recently when we had the big leak out there just to see what was going on, and to say that that residence is in disrepair would be a huge understatement. Needs some work. No, I think it just needs to be torn down. And so, I mean, you could leave a wall, so it would be a remodel instead of a totally new place. But it might be somebody might want to buy the property, but with regard to the structure itself, probably not happening. Also, if I could just make a comment. Using the funds that we might get for the improvements on the library, the old library building for our new offices. President Rice and I both voted against that purchase, and I would love to see those monies personally go to improving, to infrastructure improvements at water and wastewater. I think that's where they really need to be. Thank you.
Director Berenger?
Director Farmer.
Yeah, I know, it's mixing
you
money
can't
and all
do that.
That.
You can't do that. It's not like at the pleasure of the board, is the law. You can't mix those funds. And when we can't charge the ratepayers, I was mentioning earlier, we can't charge the ratepayers to help with the ranch. We can't charge the ratepayers for cutting down eucalyptus trees. The water and wastewater plant departments must be self-sufficient. We can't continue to loan money toward them. If we get money, we cannot. Anyway, I won't get into it. It's the color of money issue that you're having trouble with, and I don't know how to help you.
Other than trying to highlight the financial calamity that faces this district, I really don't know a lot about finances. I just make sure that I don't go into debt personally, and trying to resolve that with the district as well. Thank you.
All right, I have two requests. Laurel, did you want to speak, or you just want?
No, as it says, it's written on it.
Okay. Do you want me to read it, or just want to have it for the board to read? All right, thank you. I just want to make sure that we're... So this is a written comment. I represent several members of the community and myself in asking that parcel 13-151-045, now you'll have this card so that it has the information on it, be considered for possible use as a public facility zone property for relocation of the historic Santa Rosa Schoolhouse. This is the property at the intersection at Santa Rosa Creek and Main Street.
I think that property is encumbered.
Okay. Which is why having a list of all the properties would be, even if it's, I mean, this is, these are the, John Ellers, please. And that's the last request to speak on this item. If you want to speak on this item, please get a slip in.
Good afternoon. Cambria has a treasure. I'm sorry?
Sorry, that wasn't the end. That was only the beginning. Please begin again. I'm sorry.
I see. Cambria has a treasure that stands in potential jeopardy, and that treasure is the 1881 Santa Rosa Schoolhouse. As you may know, the land on which it stands is currently for sale by the Lions. The schoolhouse originally was given to the Lions in 1964 by Mr. Molinari under the condition that it be used as a museum. Of course, it has not been. The Lions have recognized that the conditions of the original donation and have made a motion to donate the building to the Cambria Historical Society for use as a museum under the condition that it be received as is, that is, no cost. On the other side of the equation, the Cambria Historical Society has passed a motion accepting that donation and underwriting all costs associated with moving the property. The jeopardy part is that we need a place to move it to maintain it in the community. And as has already been outlined, an ideal location for that would be at the foot of Bridge Street adjoining the post office, because that, if it's as a museum at the end of Center Street, that would anchor Center Street as a historic district. As you have seen the performance of the Cambria Historical Society, we've repaired the Bianchini House. It is a jewel of the East Village. If you've been to Center Street lately, you've seen that we have repainted the Magetti House. And so we are in step with the strategic vision of the 1994 PROS Commission that established, I want to get this in the right direction. Bridge Street is here, and Center Street is horizontal, so the top is north. In this designation, they had a gazebo in that. So this whole area was envisioned as a historic park. Of course, the museum is here, the Chinese Temple area is here, the Magetti House is here, and so it would be a unique opportunity provide a sightline down Bridge Street, anchor Center Street with a historical perspective, fulfilling this 1994 strategic vision back then. So what the Cambria Historical Society is prepared to do is to maintain in reciprocity for receiving the grounds, we would be maintaining it, which is no small feat, maintaining it basically as long as the Historical Society exists. So I'm asking your consideration to make the Pocket Park parcel available for locating the schoolhouse. Thank you.
Thank you for your input on that. I don't have any other speaker slips. Director Berenger?
Yes, we're, as you know this from the comments, this is one of the reasons that I think it makes an ideal opportunity for, and the first step was to purchase the library. Some people have concerns about parking, which could be negotiated in a, if, in fact, the schoolhouse were to leave. This would provide a tremendous opportunity for the community as a whole. It's been a vision for many people. Some people might not see that the keystone was the purchase of the library, but it was. It frees up some property that is surplus.
If I could just...
Yes.
We need to stick to the agenda item, which is about getting a list of properties
yes.
that might be possible
this
for
is
sale.
One of the lists of the
okay.
properties, and
thank
I just
you.
Wanted to in complete the fact that... we cannot donate property too, so the idea of getting an appraisal makes some sense. And so I believe I'm going to move, there you go, I always do, that we direct staff to provide the Board of Directors with a list of district-owned properties unencumbered by conservation easements or restrictive covenants for potential sale and limit such such search to the three properties that were mentioned by Director Sanders for an appraisal perspective and to identify a few additional properties that may be, and I think it's a common term, low-hanging fruit to also consider for the future as part of the group of properties that the district owns.
Second the motion.
Moved and seconded. Under further discussion, I would like to have a list of all the properties the district owns and whether they're encumbered or unencumbered, and just a list, not about an appraisal for all of them. We need to have that. That should not be a difficult list to put together. And maybe if there's a few that should be put toward the top because they're unencumbered and maybe marketable, then that's something that the board can... Because this is just setting the policy to get us started down this road, I think.
Okay, I wouldn't accept that as an amendment to the motion because there might be hundreds of properties, and I think right now to provide the focus with the continuing effort to identify all the properties, I agree with that. But as far as my motion, I don't want this to be like the build-out reduction program. You know, they're finding lots all over the place, and they've been working on it for 2 years. So my suggestion remains the same. And I will add the fact that a further inventory of all properties should be developed before the end of next year, or whatever you want to say. But there are a tremendous amount of properties that we have.
Yeah, I would accept that amendment to the motion. Let me just say, I think... President Rice, you're spot on. We need a list. Good Lord, we own property all over the place, and we really need to get a better handle on it. I think where the differentiation lies is with respect to the three properties that I mentioned, we would be spending some money. We have to get appraisals on them. We have to know what they're worth, as opposed to the others, which... at a future date could be considered for sale, like we're considering these three.
The reason why I would want the list when we are looking at these specific three properties that you mentioned and other possible properties is it's that other possible properties thing, and seeing it in the full context I think is kind of important, at least for me, so that I can see what is our list of asset properties, and not that I don't want to have an appraisal on all of them, for heaven's sakes. That doesn't make any sense at all to spend that money. But it shouldn't be that difficult for our district staff to pull up a list of the properties that we own and whether or not they're encumbered.
The assessor can tell you in a nanosecond.
Correct. So we should be able to get that as part of it's not any additional work, I don't believe. I mean, I could be completely wrong about that. But so we need to clarify, because you said that you would accept the amendment, but I think the motion maker said that he would not?
No, I think the motion member said that, yes, it makes sense to address all of those issues, but it doesn't make sense to delay to have this available to us as early as next month, whereas I think if we want to identify everything, I believe that it will take too long. I think it makes sense. The maker of the motion said that, yes, I think what Director Sanders was saying, yes, he agrees with the fact that that in due time we should have all properties identified, but not at during this process.
Yeah. Vice President Sanders just said it would take a nanosecond to get the list, though.
Well, yeah, but it's a list of assessors' parcel numbers. How about if the list is prepared as soon as possible, with at least the three coming back next month?
But not already having them assessed or anything, because that's too short a time period.
Right,
but just to have
I don't agree with Bush kicking the can down the road. To have in order for us to make a decision on three properties, an assessment, an initial assessment at least, should be done. Or we can't. Or how are we going to make a decision? That's my point.
That can be done. At least a ballpark figure can be arrived at between now and next month.
I would accept that.
Okay.
But determine enough so that a decision to move forward on listing for sale can be made next month. We have so many things that we need that are going to fit into this. Again, I have a vision. Maybe I have a vision, but I want the community involved in actual in the configuration of the library, et cetera. So that's, I want to move forward as soon as possible. And if that's the direction that the second is in, fine. If we have to wait until all properties are identified and evaluated, even at an initial basis, I'm not accepting the motion.
If we can't list the properties we own in a very short period of time before the end of next month, we have a much bigger problem than trying to sell properties that we own.
Yeah. We should be able to do that. I'm confident we can. But if we can just get all of that on next month's agenda, I think that would make everybody happy.
I hear the direction that's coming. I think, is staff clear on the motion? Because I want to make sure that we get it clear. Could you restate the motion?
I can read it back.
Yeah, that would be a good way to start.
Good luck.
Okay, motion to direct staff to provide a list of district-owned properties that are unencumbered by conservation easement or restrictive covenants for potential sale, and limit such search to the three properties for an appraisal. Oh, hold on. Sorry, it's a little tiny. For an appraisal, and add three properties for consideration to be discussed at the October board meeting, and staff will provide a complete list as soon as possible of the CCSD-owned property.
So the motion maker agrees with the motion
that
as it was read back, and the second.
I do.
All right, further discussion? All right, let's have a roll call vote, please.
Director Berenger?
Aye.
Vice President Sanders?
Yes.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
President Rice?
Aye. All right. Item 7B. General Manager Gruber.
Thank you, Madam President and board members. Item 7B is discussion and consideration of Ordinance 03-2017, amending the CCSD Municipal Code Section 3.04.030 to add provisions to the provide relief for the fees and charges relating to leaks. The fiscal impact, the actual fiscal impact is unknown, but staff anticipates it will be less than $10,000. And this, just as a point of clarification, this is from a revenue perspective, the $10,000. It does not include the monies that will be saved in staff time, not having to pursue these on an individual basis. And if we formed a policy relating to this, it would probably save a considerable amount of staff time. So that would be offset from an expenditure standpoint. So it's probably even less than this $10,000. Section 3.04.303 of the CCSD Municipal Code, and we have attachment one, authorizes the Board of Directors to grant relief from payments of fees and charges to achieve equity and fairness. That provision requires a formal application to be provided to this district and stipulates that any relief granted shall not be retroactive beyond the billing period immediately preceding the date of the application. Staff receives frequent requests from customers for reductions of charges for water leak through the system. These leaks are normally the result of broken pipes and are not readily visible, such as underground irrigation pipes, or are internal in the house, such as a toilet leaks. In other words, a toilet that continues to run. Staff is recommending changes to the section 3.04.030 that would authorize the general manager to approve reduction in fees and charges in certain circumstances. When a customer has a leak that is beyond his or her ability to prevent and which the customer discovers and repairs in a timely manner, the proposed ordinance will require the customer to pay for all the water that flows through his or her meter, but allows the customer to pay at the lowest unit cost rather than the highest unit cost. It would also allow reductions of waiver of fees paid for the sustainable water facility cost, sewer cost, and any penalties paid on the excess water loss. And then on the back here, we have some further language regarding 3.04.030, and then the municipal code. And thank you, David. And then the ordinance attached. And again, I just want to go to the fourth whereas, because I think this is the most important component of the changes that we're recommending. The recommended municipal code revision should require the customer to pay for all the water that flows through his or her meter, but allows the customer to pay at the lowest unit cost rather than the highest unit cost, and would also allow the reduction of waivers of fees paid for the sustainable water facility cost, sewer cost, and any penalties paid on the excess water loss. And this is a similar practice to other municipalities and water districts that are trying to get a handle on some kind of leak adjustment policy, if you will. So if there's any questions from the board, I'll be more than happy to answer them at this time.
And this is an item that to introduce and waive by further reading an ordinance. And I have a couple of comments. Director Barringer.
Do you have public comment?
I do not have any public comment.
Okay, I have a comment that I think that this is a good approach toward the problem, and especially item under G, it says an applicant for relief under this section may appeal to the general manager's decision to the board of directors, and it does put a timeline on it, so that's people should understand that it must be submitted to the district in writing not more than 10 days after the general manager's decision, and I think it fixed the problem. It puts this the onus on the owner, and it makes it so that some people don't have to move because of a water leak that they didn't recognize or come to, and it gives the general manager broader authority than I think that they felt they had in the past. So I would support this.
Likewise, for me.
Yeah, I'm definitely in favor of setting policies so that we can save staff time and be more efficient because we've got something set in place. My concerns are with the way that this is written. It still leaves a lot of ambiguity that then has to get decided on a case by case. What's normal usage for the property? They have to look into that. I mean, that's not standardized. It gives a range, but what range? I mean, is normal usage, are we going to always have it be the lowest end? It concerns me also that we have the ability that the SWF charges would be completely waived. Seems to me if we lower the amount that completely eliminating that kind of does us in SWF-wise for funding the project, but I could be mistaken on that. It's not for the base rate. It's only for the usage charge and for the operating charge, which are the two other charges built in.
But it does say may be waived.
Yeah, maybe.
It doesn't say must be. It says may be waived. Maybe,
yeah. Again, then we have to go case by case. Are we going to waive it on this one? Or are we not going to waive it on this one? Which then ends up upending the purpose for having a policy in place, it seems to me. One of the things that I really did like to see in here is number E, listen to me, letter E under number 3, which is the general manager and customer can agree to a payment plan to spread payments out over 12 months. And the reason I like that is sometimes when it is a high amount, even though it is getting reduced to the lowest tier, it still can be a significant amount of money. And sometimes just your plain water bill can be difficult to pay, especially if you've already had shutoff charges or whatever. So having the ability to pay it over time, I think, is a great addition. So these things that are kind of variable and vague are good for allowing judgment of the general manager, but it concerns me that the policy isn't going to do what a good policy is intended to do, which is to relieve some of that case-by-case decision-making and ensure fairness across all of the customers.
Madam President, I'm certainly sympathetic to having a set of rules that kind of brings some order out of chaos here. However, I would caution against having a very rigid set of rules. There are so many variables that I think it makes a lot of sense to vest some discretion in the general manager so that justice, if you will, can be done.
Agreed, and that's why I like number 2, which is the leak resulted in usage that is more than twice the normal usage for the property. Yeah. That's an easy thing to measure. I'm not talking about clamping down tightly like this number of units.
No, but you were...
But
you were,
being more specific to amounts.
You were speaking of other provisions in this proposed ordinance that vest in the general manager some discretion, and I thought I heard you say you wanted those tightened up.
And, yeah, and you even mentioned normal usage. Is that normal usage summer? Is that normal usage not? I think it's easy to come up with a normal usage, and it gives the general manager an opportunity to negotiate something, and there's always a provision that if the customer isn't happy with the general manager's decision, that they're going to make an appeal to the board, which I recommend people do more often than they do. So, mm-hmm. Anyway...
Is it going to be a written determination of the general manager so that there's a date that we can count from? A written determination from the general manager? Because it says that if somebody wants to appeal the decision of the general manager to the board, they can do that?
Yeah, if the general manager makes a decision, he should obviously inform the person that is his final decision and they have 10 days to make an application to the board. I think that's pretty clear.
How am I going to know when that determination was made? That's where my confusion is.
The customer, the general manager will make a determination and an offer and an accepted offer by the
in writing. That's all I'm asking. If it's going to be something in writing,
yeah, we could come up. And I understand, President Rice, what you're saying. We could come up with a an administrative
just a form or
administrative
something.
Process.
Yeah, just a checklist that Monique says this is what we're going to go steps we're going to take.
Yeah, and we can come up with an administrative process, and I think you bring up some very valid points, but I think the intent of this is really to treat people more uniformly and fairly.
Agreed.
And so what we'll probably see is more consistency versus less consistency. You do bring up some good points. We tried, when I worked with district council on this, we tried, and Patrick, we tried to keep it as general as possible because there is a lot of different variables. I think the other board members are right on that. And we went through all those variables, and we wrote them down, and then we realized that we probably would never get the municipal code passed if we incorporated all of our first draft of those. But you bring up some very good points.
In other words, you're saying that the purpose is not as much to the efficiency and more to the consistency of how we are interacting when there's a leak?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing now is the opposite of what we want to achieve by the hopeful adoption of this, and that's treating people consistently and fairly.
That's a totally reasonable reason to do it.
It's almost like the story of Solomon of cutting the baby in half, and it's a wisdom thing every time, and I don't necessarily know that we get it right all the time, so we'll see. But we'd like to just improve on that, and I think the customers will feel better that they're getting treated more.
And you think this change really does add to the consistency that you'll be able to apply across?
Yes, ma'am. But
customers.
I mean, if there's some things that the board's concerned about,
I'm just trying to make sure that we're meeting the goal you're trying to get to.
Yeah.
That's all.
Madam President.
Yes.
May I add that? The board should set policy and not get into the color of the paper that the application is on. And
I don't want to get into the color of the paper.
So with that said, I would like to introduce Ordinance 03-2717 by title only and waive further reading.
Yeah, we'll need it. First, we should have a motion to waive further reading and read by title only. Do that
I
separately.
I move that we waive further reading and of an ordinance amending section 3.04.030 of the Cambria Community Services District Municipal Code regarding relief and fees charges and related to leaks.
Second the motion.
Moved and seconded. I do not have any speaker slips on this item, but I see Director Farmer.
This may be a minor thing to even address, but we're a rather unique community here. And 30% of the homes are not occupied full time. And so we have people coming here, vacation rentals, folks coming up for a week or a weekend that own a residence. And how often this occurs, I don't know, but having seen it happen, where people leave and the toilet's running. And whether they're gone for a week or a month or whatever, that's kind of a awkward set of circumstances right there. I mean, whether it's, let's say, the property management with regard to a vacation rental or the owner of the property, something like that, where the water is just flowing and flowing and flowing, that seems to be, it can happen to anybody, but it's, like I say, unique to our community in that this could happen more frequently. It's just something I thought I'd bring up as cause for reflection.
Sure.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Then we can have a roll call vote, please.
Director Berenger?
Aye.
Vice President Sanders?
Yes.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
President Rice?
Aye. That vote passes unanimously.
Well, what do we do now? Now we have to...
Now introduce the ordinance.
Now we... I'd like to introduce Ordinance 03-2017 by title only and wait for the reading. Is that what I do?
Just introduce the ordinance at this point. Mm-hmm. We've already waived further reading, so it's fine. We don't
to
do
introduce
enough ordinances
ordinance.
To be used to this.
I'll let somebody else make the motion.
If I could suggest, it just needs a motion to introduce the ordinance at this point.
Excuse me. Thank you. I move we introduce Ordinance 03-2017, amending CCSD Municipal Code Section 3.04.030 to add provisions to provide relief from fees and charges related to leaks.
I'll second it.
Moved by Vice President Sanders, seconded by Director Berenger to introduce the ordinance. Let's have a roll call vote, please.
Director, Vice President Sanders?
Yes.
Director Berenger?
Yes.
Director Farmer?
Yes.
President Rice?
Yes. Thank you for putting in the work on that so that we can be more fair.
Thank Patrick, and he spearheaded it.
Where's he at? I'll thank him right away.
And Stephanie, so they get credit credit's due. So.
All right. Next item is 7C.
Thank you, Madam President and board members. Item 7C is discussion and consideration of adoption of Resolution 39-2017, amending the CCSD bylaws to limit the duration of Board of Directors meetings. The only fiscal impact that would result from the CCSD is opposing a limited on the duration of its meetings are costs associated with additional meetings that might be necessary from time to time. The background on this is at the August 2017 meeting, the Board of Directors discussed an issue of the length of its meetings and directed that the resolution be brought back, adding a bylaw provision to limit the meeting durations based on this direction. Resolution 39-2017 has been prepared to add Section 2.3 to the CCSD bylaws that would provide as following. 2.3, meeting lengths. The business at regular meetings of the Board of Directors, including any scheduled closed sessions, shall be conducted for no more than 4 hours, a four-hour period, unless extended by four-fifths vote of the Board. In the event that there are remaining items on the agenda at the end of the four-hour period, the Board may adjourn the meeting to a specific date and time in accordance with the provisions of Government Code Section 54955. The intent and purpose of this policy is to encourage a reasonable time in which the Board of Directors' business is discussed. That's discussed, not discussed, I'm sorry. And protect against fatigue in discussing and deciding important issues, district issues. It should be noted that the limit of the duration of the meeting has been structured to apply to the entire meeting, including the closed session item. So an example today would be we started closed session at 3, Madam President and Board. We adjourned at right about 4 o'clock. We reconvened here at about 10 after 4. So that would, if you had four-fifths vote to end them or continue the meeting, but if you didn't want to, it would end at 7:10. So there a four-hour period, including closed session. So.
And we would have to decide what date the rest of the items would be continued to.
To a date specific at a later time, that's correct.
Mr. Hirsch?
The way it reads, it speaks to regular meetings, and the earlier meeting today was a special meeting.
You're right.
No, so you could interpret it as, and of course often we have closed session items on regular meeting agendas.
Understood. So today wouldn't necessarily be one. Okay.
District Council is absolutely right.
And,
wait a minute. Why is that? The meetings at regular?
Because the closed session was a special meeting and not a part of this meeting.
It says that regular meetings of the Board of Directors, including any scheduled closed sessions.
Right, but that's a closed session for the meeting. That's the regular board meeting. Today's closed session was a special meeting.
That doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Does it make sense to you? I mean, we had a closed session meeting, and now we're having a regular meeting, and the entire length of both of them would be included.
That closed session wasn't on this agenda. That closed session was a special meeting agenda.
Semantics aside.
Semantics is all about when it's about bylaws.
Do we have anybody, any member of the public?
I do not have any speakers on this item.
Well, that said, then, I move that we adopt Resolution 39-2017, amending the CCSD bylaws to limit duration of Board of Directors meetings.
Second the motion.
I just want to make a I want to make a comment. Maybe we should just like maybe restructure the order in which we address all the issues, and we'll make the general manager's report at the end. So if there's any fatigue, it won't be that big a deal. I'm just just a joke,
Chair. Oh, come on.
Just a joke.
Well, let's be kind.
If you didn't do my report, you would get out of here in 2 hours. I love it.
One just technical question. So it's 4/5 vote. Does that mean that it would have to be unanimous while we only have four people? And what do we do if there's only three board members? Microphone.
You look at what constitutes 75%. If there's only
all right.
four, then...
Okay.
80%, 4/5.
Okay. So half of an audience person or something. All right. I just wanted the clarification. So it's been moved by Director Berenger, seconded by Vice President Sanders. Let's have a roll call vote, please.
Director Berenger?
Aye.
Vice President Sanders?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
President Rice?
Yes. Thank you. That vote passes 4-0. We're on to item 7D.
Thank you, Madam President and board members. Item 70 is discussion and consideration to fill the vacancies on the ad hoc committees and liaison positions created by the resignation of Director Michael Thompson. The fiscal impact, there's no fiscal impact that's been identified relating to this specific agenda item. Under discussion, as the Board of Directors is aware, on August 24th, 2017, Director Michael Thompson announced his resignation of the board effective as of August 31st, 2017. Accordingly, it has been appropriate for the board to consider filling former Director Thompson's liaison positions and ad hoc committee appointments. Director Thompson served on the 2017 Fire Department Ad Hoc Committee, Parks, Recreation, and Open Space, otherwise known as PROS, Ad Hoc Committee, and which is really it's a commission. The PROS is a commission. Mm-hmm. And Cambria Fire Safe Focus Group Liaison and the San Simeon CCSD Liaison. The options are newly appointed board members fill the vacancy listed above until new committees are assigned in January of 2018. That's one option. Second option is postpone filling the vacancies until Vice President Sanders' replacement has been appointed. Vacant for October and November. Ad hoc committees do not have regular meeting schedules, but instead meet as needed. And the third, the board discussion of changes is membership of any or all committees, including non-vacant positions. Below is your I'm not going to read who's on those committees, but the current and ad hoc committee and liaison positions. The current, there's a finance ad hoc committee. There's a fire department ad hoc committee. There's an infrastructure ad hoc committee, parks, recreation, and open space ad hoc committee or commission, vacant and director vacant, and wastewater supply, formerly sustainable water facility, water permitted and EIR ad hoc committee. There's an information technology ad hoc committee, and the liaisons are North Coast Advisory, Coast Union School District, Cambria Healthcare District, Cambria Forest Committee, Cambria Tourism Board, Cambria Fire Safe Focus Group, Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, San Simeon CCSD, and regulatory and other local, state, and federal agencies. And again, we're looking at Cambria Fire Safe Focus Group under liaison and the San Simeon CCSD under liaison. So with that, Madam President, I'll be more than happy to answer any questions.
So if you see the staff report at the top says from the board president, and I wrote this prior to the meeting that we had on the 19th, thinking we would have a new director on board by now, and that did not occur. I think that it is appropriate and to wait until we have somebody that we can appoint to those positions, and if unless there's objection, I think we can table this item. Does anybody have any objection to that or more discussion?
I say table it, or table. Option one would be something I would prefer, but table it till whenever.
All right. That's
I would table it until
until we have somebody that we can fill those.
Or more.
Sure.
Yep.
There isn't anything on any of the committees that any that Mike Thompson was on that right. is urgent, is there?
I agree.
I don't know that there is because I didn't serve on any committees with him.
No,
so nothing super urgent. All right. Then we are good to table that item. On item 7E.
Thank you, Madam President and board members. This is
I'm going to set your timer, okay?
Okay, discussion and consideration of procedures to fill vacancy on the CCSD Board of Directors created by the resignation, or soon-to-be resignation, of Vice President Sanders. No fiscal impact at this time. Vice President Greg Sanders has advised that he is tendering his resignation from the board effective October 31st, 2017. District Council had advised that pursuant to Government Code 1780, a vacant office may be filled either by appointment or by calling an election, as further discussed below. The remaining district board members may fill the vacancy by appointment. Such appointment must be made within 60 days of the effective date of the vacancy. In the case of the appointment, must be made by December 30th, 2017. A notice of the vacancy must be posted 3 or more conspicuous public places within the district at least 15 days before the appointment is made. A Government Code 1780 states that if a vacancy occurs in the first half of a term of the office and at least 130 days prior to the next general district election, the person appointed to fill the vacancy shall hold office until the next general district election that is scheduled 130 days more days after the date of the district board is notified of the vacancy, and therefore until the person who is elected at that election has filled the vacancy has been qualified. The person elected to fill the vacancy shall hold office for an unexpired balance of term of the office. Vice President Sanders was originally appointed to the CCSD Board of Directors on October 19, 2015, to fill the vacancy created by resignation of Merle Cliff. He was reelected in November 8, 2016 general election. Thus, the person appointed will only fill the office until the winner of the next general election to be held on November 6, 2018 is qualified. The winner of the election will then be filled fill the remainder of the term, which expires December of 2020. I'm not going to read the rest of it because it's just a process, but if any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them for the board at this time.
I do have one request to speak. Do we have questions first?
I'd much rather hear public statement.
All right. Don Howell? It's my only request to speak.
Thank you.
Like to hear your input, though.
Well, having...
Sorry. You're out of time, sir.
Well, I was quick. Yes, we'll get out of here by 7 if we keep going.
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Having observed the operations of this board over a number of years, certainly as I've been off and on here since 97 and 100% time 2004, watched many meetings over the television, not so often been here and present because I haven't been moved to speak, but I do believe that this process that we have, and it's not just this board, but it's generally, I think, in our democracy, this business of appointing existing board members, appointing successors, does not serve democracy well at all. In the history of this board, and not meaning any criticism to the board members who have all worked very hard, and I'm sure everybody wants the best for this community, where we're arguing is what the best might be. So it's not a question of motives, of my impugning people's motives, but what I have observed is that when the board appoints, this process allows a position, a board majority, to become entrenched. And this is exactly what I saw happen. Now, you can correct me if my memory doesn't serve me right. But if I recall, Vice President Sanders was originally elected to the board, serving with Funky Ballou and now Joan Coben. Vice President Sanders then, for reason of health, resigned from the board, and Gail Robinette was appointed.
I did not resign from the board.
I beg your pardon. Someone resigned because Gail was appointed. So thank you for correcting me on that. I don't recall at the moment who that was. Oh, D'Amico, okay, thank you. So Gail, Director Robinette was appointed, but then what that does is it gives the appointee a leg up on the next election. It's well known in political science that an incumbent generally always has an advantage. So the person who was not elected by anybody but was appointed then gets a leg up. And that person who is appointed is obviously going to agree with the majority that appointed them. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been appointed. So we begin to see that that majority is becoming entrenched. Then what happens is there, as another resignation comes about, the more recent, when Merrill Clift resigned and Vice President Sanders came back onto the board. Again, what that did was it just simply strengthened that minority's, that majority position. And it was, so I just do not think that democracy is well served by operating in this fashion. When I spoke to you all the last time about this issue, the response was, well, elections are too expensive. We need to do something quickly. But I have to say, you know, democracy is expensive and it is inefficient. And if we're not willing to spend the effort and the money to make democracy work, then we're going to continue to have problems. So what I would like to see happen is that both vacancies be filled by a special election. If it costs $100,000, that's what it costs. Now, you've been spending money right and left every other way. Why not spend a little on making democracy work? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Howell. I'd just like to respond from my own perspective as an individual. It's not the cost of an election that causes me heartache with two directors' positions being up. We could call an election before the 60 days is up for Mr. Thompson, but that is, we couldn't call an election for Vice President Sanders' position until 15 days after his resignation date, which is October 31st. So we would have to call two special elections. So the process, while we don't need to read it out loud because it's in the staff report, it is kind of important here. It would also mean that this board would be three people for at least probably 3 months, possibly more, depending on how quickly we could pull off a special election. Now, I don't have a problem serving on a board with three people, but I suspect people in the community might not be too happy with that time period. I suspect that not a whole lot would get done because you essentially, each one of the three directors would have a veto vote to make things not go easily. And I, for one, think that it doesn't speak well of the district if we can't find somebody that we can agree on to appoint. Speaking to process, we didn't have a discussion as a board about what do we want to have as the priority qualities of somebody that we would vote for, and I was a little disappointed with the lack of questions that may have clarified some of the positions of the candidates that were offered up by Director Berenger and the one that was offered up by Vice President Sanders. There is a person out here in the community that I know that, and there's going to have to be two of them to join us on this board. But the reason for not doing an election is partially process and not money, because it's not about, I really don't think that I'm prepared to be on a board of three people for that long. I don't think it's a good idea for the community to have only three voices speaking. I understand the concerns that arise when you have, but we were all elected, all of us. All of us got the votes and have the support of the community, some days more than others. But I think that it's important that we show both the community and the agencies that we are relying on for our permanent permit to show that we can at least appoint a replacement board member. So I would like to hear if there's anything that Mr. Sanders would like to say, Vice President Sanders would like to.
Well, I don't know that I'm very comfortable talking about the process for my own replacement. I can think of a lot of metaphors that would be funny, but Mr. Howell makes some very good points, admittedly. You know, democracy is best served by elections, I think, free and fair elections. And in this country, it's been that way since the founding of the Republic. But I think, on balance, I think President Rice is correct. There are a lot of balls in the air right now that need a lot of attention. With only three members of the board, I think, particularly with the extra assignments that board members have, you're talking about getting board members' time spread thinner than delicatessen cheese. I think it's unfair to the three who would be remaining waiting for an election to occur. Number one. Number two, I kind of agree with the concept that incumbents have a leg up, but we've gone through a series of elections in this town going back almost two decades, and at each election, I think it's been a referendum on the direction the board is going. And so it's not so much about individual candidates, in my view, as it is about the direction of the board. There's been spirited debate. There have been well-funded, smart, aggressive candidates who have run. And I think the results of the elections speak for themselves. I don't think the incumbents have had that much of an advantage. So I do think that it makes sense on balance to have appointments made to fill these seats, knowing that there will be an election for both seats in a year.
Three seats.
That's right. There will be three seats up in a year.
Director Barringer.
Yes, I agree with the speaker. But the issue of, and what my intent very publicly was to support the will of the voters. When somebody gets 60% of the vote, that's the will of the voters. And yes, I intended to and continue to think that I want to support the will of the voters. 13 months from now or less, they will have an opportunity to change that particular appointment. But more importantly, there was a given candidate that would not run, and that's the person I thought would be best served, because then the advantage of incumbency would disappear upon appointment. And that was the offer, that was the best offer to give to the community. And I am stupefied that neither of the other directors would pose even a single comment on why that particular candidate wasn't acceptable. Someone had spent 210 consecutive months dealing with the issues that are involved in this packet. 210 consecutive months. And I believe that there isn't a single person in this community that would stand at that podium and refute the honesty and the experience of that candidate. And
so
as far as selecting a process for replacing Director Sanders, I think that the best indication of the best way to do it is to address that issue on November 3rd.
Madam President, October 3rd, yeah. Madam President, if I can, I forgot to make one point when I was speaking earlier. Historically, at special elections, the turnout is far lower than it is at either a primary election or a general election. And I think the issues that the district is facing should be addressed at an election where the turnout is maximized. So special elections, I'm not a big fan of.
I'd just like to speak to one of the items that you raised. Vice President Sanders, which is that there's been a mandate. I think there's a change in the wind since the last election.
You did not hear me use the word mandate. I did not say
he used the word. Excuse me for interrupting. If you don't mind, because I was going to bring up this item. Pardon me, President Rice and Vice President Sanders. You used the word referendum, and I think the fact that
I stand corrected.
I think the fact that someone like myself got elected to the board, as opposed to the person that came in fourth place, indicates that there is a change that people. At least a number of people in this community desire on the board with regard to representation. I would also say that with regard to the 60% that voted for Director Behringer and Director Thompson in 2014, as we know, a lot has happened, a lot has changed in this community in a variety of different areas, including the emergency water facility, that people in some ways might be having second thoughts on how they would vote in the next election. And as Don Howell pointed out, and you know, I appreciate the fact that that Vice President Sanders acknowledged the many accurate points that Mr. Howell made. You know, so much about what happens in this community is perception. And the idea that the last two appointees were 4-0, I think gives people, a number of people in the community, including folks that voted for me, the feeling that the opportunity to get someone different appointed to the board isn't going to happen because of these 4-0 votes. And now, of course, I think everybody out there is very discouraged that the votes came up 2-2 last Tuesday or a week ago Tuesday, because we couldn't come to a determination as to who the best person was to fill Director Thompson's seat. How we move forward, whether it should be by appointment or election, I think obviously Director Sanders' point is well, Vice President Sanders' point is well taken, that usually when you have a special election, there's a low turnout. But we're at a very, we just seem to have challenges up the wazoo right now with regard to this district, and this is just another one of them, and how it gets resolved. I really don't have the answer, but we owe it to this community to, to somehow come from a place of being able to trust the members of the board, to not have an agenda, but to choose the best person possible, no matter what side you're on with regard to who gets appointed.
Thank I do you. Have one request to speak on this item. Jerry McKinnon.
Must have been something in this coffee because I can't keep my mouth shut. The gentleman referred to democracy. I would like to remind you, when we say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, we are one nation under God, a republic. Pledge allegiance to the republic. Republic stands for representative type government. You are our representatives. There are two words that come to my mind. One of them is questionable. The other word is judgment. Now, you are elected to your position under a republic form of government. Now we are testing you to see how reliable you are watching you in the past. We trust you. After it's all over, we can question your judgment. I am all for you making the decision because I trust you. I've seen you perform your duties. I can question some of your decisions, but I trust you to make decisions based upon your evidence. We have 12, well, I'll use the metaphor. We have 11 men and one woman who have gone through basic training.
They've lived their lives. They've met the word. And now they're volunteering once again to go onto the front line. They are like a soldier or a sailor or a Marine who are volunteering to meet the enemy or to make the decisions. We'll only find out how well they've done after we see their judgment calls. That's your responsibility. You're not one issue, not one issue reports. You are representing the community of Cambria, and your judgment determines how well this community goes. I trust you. I might question you, but I'll trust you. Thank you,
Mr. McKinnon. Clive Metrick. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Yes, you did. Okay, I'll be brief. I think it's important that elections be fair, and I think a key word here is fair. I don't really think that 60 days is an adequate amount of time for an election to take place, especially when there are biases in the community in terms of access to the internet. You have an older demographic here who really is not as connected as many of us are. I know some people are exceptions, but I think you run a risk of basically having the election just taken away by a group of people that are active on the internet. That's my only comment.
Thank you. I don't have any other requests to speak on this item.
I'm sorry, President
Director
Rice.
Farmer.
I just want to make a quick observation. Once again, Jerry McKinnon, in his eloquence, got up and spoke to the issue. I was a bit taken when he got to one point and using the analogy of the people stepping up who applied, you know, to be appointed, and said it's kind of like, you know, you volunteer for the armed forces, and you go out there and you meet the enemy. And my first flash was Pogo. We've met the enemy, and he is us, the members on the board, and how we somehow get in conflict with one another, and not necessarily. Well, I won't go any further. I just wanted to point that out. Thank you.
The item is to set a date, and I think when this item was put onto the agenda, we expected to have another member, and maybe perhaps another brain, some more brain power would help us in setting that date and a process. I want to be respectful to both the timing and to Vice President Sanders, since I know that he doesn't want to leave. Mm-hmm. So, tabling this is okay with me as long as it works. Because we need to have another board member. I think it would help us.
That definitely would have been my suggestion to address this issue either at the next board meeting, but definitely to table it until we're through with
the appointment. And I'm glad we've had this discussion. I think it was a very valuable discussion. And if there isn't any objection, then we will.
I'm encouraged with Director Farmer's.
Okay.
Comments.
All right. Do we need to take a 4/5 vote? No, we didn't have it. It's only been 3 hours.
I asked District Council that, and he said it's next month, and I said, well, not technically. You passed it, so.
That's right. In fact, that's what I would do. I would put this off till next month. That's my.
So.
It's up to you.
It's a resolution. It's effective immediately.
Hold you.
I would like, if the general manager would introduce the item, I would like to speak to the staff report.
Yes, ma'am.
Just, you don't have to go through in depth.
No, I won't. On a side note, Mr. Church earlier had addressed some concerns about the impoundment basin, and I had an opportunity to talk to him later on about that. And what was observed was the impoundment basin itself. When I showed those pictures, of the trees, of the willows being cleared away, it now offered a different perspective of the pond. So he took some pictures, and there was another individual he spoke with, and it was the pond itself that is now
exposed
that wasn't exposed before. So before we ended the meeting, I just wanted to clarify that. Nobody has dug another pond out me knowing about it in the last 24 hours. So, but
Thank you for that clarification, Madam President.
And board members. Item 7E is discussion and consideration. I'm sorry. 7F.
Maybe we should have made it three hours and not four.
Discussion and consideration of providing health insurance for members of the Board of Directors. Madam President.
All right. So I just want to speak to this today briefly. We can have the decision at another time. The request that was made was to have an item on the agenda for the board to discuss whether or not we would go forward looking at a policy of providing health care. This resolution couldn't be passed today anyway. It has to be, the costs have to be published at least 20 days prior to anything getting done. I was on the phone this morning with CalPERS because I had to go through the step of being authorized to discuss what happens in the district to be able to do that. But I was on the phone this morning and getting some of the questions answered, and I just want to be clear about this. The item wasn't to have the district pay for the health care for the directors. It was to have it be available if the directors wanted to have it, and I needed to know if there was a minimum the district has to pay, and there is. $133 a month is the minimum, and the agreement can include only that, or it can include paying 100%, and the director pays nothing, or the director pays everything except that $133. There's additional complications for any board members that might be PERS, meaning they worked at another public agency, and so they have retirement through that, and they would be, if they qualify under our guidelines, which this board would set, they would be eligible for retirement benefits. But those guidelines could include things like you have to have served 4 or 5 terms sequentially in order to be eligible for the health care in retirement benefit as a board member. So there are a lot of things that are not included in this report, and it's actually one of the... It's a fairly good example of a situation where we asked to bring a policy forward for the board to consider whether we'd want to go get more information on it, but just came back with this is what we recommend. If we'd had the options in the staff report, there may not be so many people in the community that are all up in arms about it. And that's partially the fault of the executive committee that asked it to be done as quickly as possible. But again, I was on the phone for 30 minutes this morning with CalPERS, so it didn't take me very long to get the answers to the questions I was trying to get answered. It doesn't have an impact on the current people that are covered at the district, all the staff members. It doesn't affect any of their rates or any of that. And so I just wanted to put that out there because, I have a dog in the fight in that I need health insurance. But the board is the one that makes the decision whether or not that's a benefit that they want to offer and whether that's something they want to do. So I don't have an interest in whichever way the majority of the board wants to make that decision. So I just wanted to put that out there because I know it's been a concern. This is not what I was expecting or what I had asked for. I just wanted to have the discussion, and if three people say no, three people say no.
President Rice, yeah, when I saw it too, it didn't have any close idea of having even your brief discussion as a preamble. My suggestion is that we table the item, but I think that you could get a consensus without a vote that says that it should be something that the board would consider. And we table it until we have more information, and I would suggest strongly that the staff report not be in this form because I could not support any of the recommendations that are here.
Agreed.
If we have a speaker slips...
I do have a couple. You want?
Now, it's up to the board president. Maybe it would help us have a discussion, but
well,
tabling
if
it...
they've sat through the whole meeting.
Yeah, if tabling it cuts people off, I'm not in favor of that. I think we need input from the public.
Well, let's hear from the public, and then we can go forward
from
there.
Then my leaning is to table it. I'm just letting you know.
Got it. So we'll start with Don Howell, followed by Christine. Is Christine still here? Christine Heinrich? Okay. And followed by Mike Lyons.
Well, my remark will be very short because what I was responding to and thinking about was based upon the staff report. I have to say, however, that I think that the whole discussion of insurance and the board providing insurance for directors or any kind of issue having to do with health insurance at this time is probably not the best time to be talking about this. We really don't know what the health insurance system is going to look like even a few months from now, much less a year from now. So I think maybe there are other more important things right now that perhaps need to be taken care of. Spending time on this is probably not the best idea. I have to say that the staff report, I was horrified. The idea that we might be paying health insurance for retired directors till they croak at 90 or something is simply not acceptable, and no one in this community is going to go with that. So anyway, enough said. I'll wait until the actual agenda item comes up, and I think I'll probably have more to say about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mike Lyons? It's my last request to speak. Good evening.
Yes, hi. Yes, there's a lot of misunderstanding about this, and I don't think I'll address the minutia or even the small details of this, but what I would like to say is that, in principle, I'm not opposed to considering as part of the compensation of volunteers who do a big job for this community and don't really make anything from it except for stipends that are well known. I don't think the principle is at issue here. And if it helps us retain the best people that could be in these offices, I could certainly see at least myself being in favor of it. I do have a couple of questions. Again, this is maybe too much into the weeds, but when you do reevaluate this question, please include these things. Does the health insurance cover the families of any board member? Okay, that's one question. And what happens to those board members over the age of 65 who then mostly benefit from Medicare? Does the insurance policy become the supplemental on your insurance package, or does it disappear altogether? The only other two things I would note is that, Director Rice, you mentioned the word retirement benefits, and this is only concerning insurance, health insurance.
Correct.
So I'm glad to clarify that. And I would like to know, since you're the only person who on the current board I think would be the beneficiary of this, would you be willing to recuse yourself from the decision?
I absolutely would. I absolutely have no problem doing that. And speaking to the retirement issue, there's a complication. It only took me 5 of the 20 minutes I was talking to her to get that has to do with anybody that's currently a PERS retiree. If they had been a board member or they're currently a board member, they are eligible under certain guidelines if they've served 4 terms, for example, and are over the age of 65 and receiving a monthly payment from PERS. Then they would be eligible for benefits when they're not on the board. But that's only for people who are PERS and have served 4 terms and are over the age of 65, which I think would eliminate almost, if not all, of the retired directors. So those are all very good questions, and I think that we can have that discussion when we bring that back, and I think that you bring up a good point. I don't mind recusing myself. Not even slightly. All right.
Excuse me, Madam President.
Director
I just want to make a comment. Yes. If someone has served 4 terms on this board, there should either be a statue erected out there for them, or we should check their sanity, one of the two.
Didn't Peter Jolicott serve 4 terms?
I'll nominate him.
So, future agenda items?
Just really quick on Mr. Lyons' questions were yes and yes. In other words, it would support. You can have a dependent package, just like the employees would, And then after 65, it becomes a supplement. It becomes a second, what they call a secondary or supplemental
policy.
Is
your microphone on?
It becomes a secondary policy after 65. And just so I can get a little direction, would the board be receptive to alternatives? In other words, we just made the assumption of the 85-15. Would you? We can go into more detail about the pension reform and the minimum payments and kind of give you a laundry list, if you will, of options. So just give us some direction. We can talk about that later. So that I can meet with the executive committee again and discuss this.
I think the executive committee could take that forward.
All right. So then we know where we're going on that one, and so this one will come back.
Right. Anything else?
Thank you for indulging me that explanation. I appreciate it. I appreciate it. That's is the second time today I get to use this. We are adjourned.
Thank you.
See you next Tuesday. What time is that meeting Tuesday?